Now I call this work session to order. We will begin with a moment of the Pledge of Allegiance, followed by the moment of silence.
I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
Thank you very much. Smoking chocolate, I love that. All right. We will now have the nonprofit presentations come forward. First is the Central Virginia Partnership for Economic Development. And before I go any further, I'd just like to add one thing. I was asked to remind folks of this. When we come in, even if we're having a 4 o'clock board meeting, they do apologize, but if court is still in session downstairs, we do need to leave your cell phones in the car. So I just wanted to, I was asked to remind folks of that. Thank you. Go ahead. I'm sorry.
No problem. Can load me up. There we go. Do I advance?
Just left click.
Hi, Helen Coffin, Central Virginia Partnership President. First of all, thank you so much for putting me first on the agenda. That's a real treat today. So, I don't think I've ever been anywhere near first, so I guess you do rotate. Yeah. So I got my lucky prize. Next year, I'll expect to wait.
All the A's and B's stayed home today. So.
Yeah. Anyway, so thank you for that. Appreciate the time to walk you through the partnership briefly. I feel like all of you are pretty familiar with our organization, so I'll be fairly quick on this. We are 8 counties plus city of Charlottesville, so from Nelson to Culpeper, kind of everything in between. We are a 501c6 not-for-profit that also have a C3 foundation. And of course, we're a collaboration of localities, so government, business, and higher education. We moved in February to the UVA Research Park, and I think when I spoke to you last time, we were in the process of moving, so we're pleased to be settled in. It's much nicer space, and it costs less, which is really very nice. It is a little far from Flavanna, so Steve Nichols is a trooper to travel to see us. Kurt Kruger of McGuire Woods is our current chair. As you all may recall, Steve Nichols is our locality board member for Flavanna County. He's also a past chair. And then we work closely with Jennifer Edwards, your economic development coordinator as well, and are pleased to welcome her to our group. Listed all investors, so you have that. You can see it's a wide variety. This year, we are thrilled to have added Davenport & Company, and also, I've totally forgotten their name. We just added somebody from Flavanna. Help me out.
Carpenport?
Yeah. Oh, my gosh. That was sad. I've had a crazy day today dealing with a legal issue, so I'm just
imagine that.
Yeah, I'm not going to give you any more detail on that. So I apologize for that. We're really excited to have them. Program works focused on target industries. I think most of you know that when we did the Go Virginia Region 9 growth plan, we found that the same targets were still applicable, so that was great news to have that in-depth research done and reiterate those. And we are the lead support organization for Go Virginia. As part of that, we did a site readiness project. Your Williams Heritage Alexander site was part of our original growth plan. I think some of you know that. The partnership decided to take one of the recommendations in that plan and advance site readiness. So we basically reallocated your locality dollars from last year to get matching dollars from Go Virginia and do quite a bit of due diligence work on that site. You also, your Economic Development Department, did contribute some funds to that as well. Again, you're leveraging that matching fund, so every dollar we put in or you put in was matched. So we think that was a really neat project this year. And what's exciting about it, all 8 of our counties participated. So we advanced site readiness in each county, at least one site. And again, as you can see, yours, I think, was 5 parcels. This year, our request is just slightly up from last year, $13,233, based on a 50 cents per capita formula, and pretty straightforward, I think. And just always want to remind you that it's a long-term process to do economic development. It's a team sport, and it really takes all of us to ensure long-term success, and we certainly appreciate your support in the past. And I'm also next up with the workforce, so. Any questions on the partnership?
No question? Thank you so very much. And we'll now go with the Virginia Career Works.
Yes, so the first thing I'll tell you, you can see the logos changed. The Piedmont Workforce Network, on which Tony O'Brien is your council member, is now changed to Virginia Career Works Piedmont Region. That's going to be confusing to all of us for a while. I know I still call it PWN. Tony probably does too, so I have to work hard to not do that.
That's a statewide change.
That was a statewide change. They wanted everything to sound the same, so everything's changed to Virginia Career Works. I think long-term, it's a great idea. Short-term, it's painful. As you know, we have there are 15 workforce development areas in Virginia. Ours is, there are 11 localities, and ours is all the planning districts 9 and 10. It matches the Go Virginia region. Tony O'Brien is your supervisor, and then Dawn from Fielder's Choice is your private sector member on the board. And again, the mission is helping job seekers, but also really focused on meeting the workforce needs of our employers for the short and long term. I've got a lot of slides in here about what WIOA does. We don't always do that. We kind of try to do that every other year or so, so you guys have that information. I'm going to go through these really quickly. If you have any questions, I'm happy to answer them. But this is just some information on the federal legislation. We actually have locations, a comprehensive one-stop change from Hydraulic Road to right off Railroad, Glenwood Station, right behind the mall. In Charlottesville, we also have affiliate centers in Culpeper and in Orange. The Culpeper and Orange sites are partially funded by those localities as well. And then, of course, we're always happy to meet with folks here at the library or other community sites. We have six core programs. The one we oversee specifically is Title I, Adult Dislocated Worker and Youth Programs under the WIOA. But these other folks partner with us. So, for example, at the Charlottesville Comprehensive Center, the Virginia Employment Commission's office, regional offices are housed with us. So although we moved from a great big center with lots and lots of partners to a much smaller center with fewer partners, we still, all the mandated partners, we really are trying to work very closely with everyone. Basic career services, individualized career services, just again so you guys kind of remember what we do every now and then. Training services, a number are offered. Folks that qualify get a case manager and are access to significant training dollars to help them on their journeys and get good career ladder, self-sufficient jobs. In terms of Fluvanna County, this is really the slide I want to spend a little bit of time on. You had 543 residents visit the Charlottesville Center in program year 2018, ending June 30th of this year. If they visit more than once, they're counted more than once, so just so you're clear, it's not necessarily 543 distinct people. 132 residents participated in Title I services, and 752 got the Virginia Employment Commission, for the most part, services. So you had a number of residents that did benefit from what we do. Our request this year is 15 cents per capita. That's our standard request to all the localities, or $3,970. Just so you all know, the council each year decides specifically how that money will be spent. We think it will be used for a Go Virginia matching project in the workforce arena this year. But again, you've got Tony O'Brien there at the table to be sure that that money is spent for a cause that you all would approve of and that would be appropriate. And again, I'm glad to answer any questions.
Are there any questions?
Is the 15 cent what it was last year also?
Yes, we keep that. We keep that as 15 cents.
Okay.
But it comes up to a bigger number. It sounds like a small number, but it comes up to a
lot of people.
Yeah.
Already, thank you.
I like that first and no questions. Thank you all so much.
All right.
This is too easy.
Just do something.
Good job.
Yeah. Thank you so much.
Fluvanna County Arts Council, Adele Schaefer.
Good afternoon.
Good afternoon.
Good afternoon.
I'm Adele Schaefer, president of the Fluvanna County Arts Council, and as you are aware, we are the group that provides for the various programs that are held at Carey's Brook Center for the Performing Arts. First of all, I do want to say thank you very much for your past support for the Arts Council. Among all of this work, we have to have some fun. And that's what I like to think that we're doing. We're providing that opportunity for a little fun. If you look through the handbill, which we printed 6,000 of these, was hand-delivered to all of the residents at Lake Monticello. It's available all over the place. If you look through that, you'll see that the type of entertainment that we have pulled together for this season, there is something there for everybody. We take the fact that we are a community theater of the community very seriously. So consequently, we try to provide the entertainment that at least appeals to somebody. And if you all haven't at least attended one program, I know Tony's been there.
Yeah, I've seen three or four of them.
Please feel free to come. We've had the last play that we had was written by our local playwright, Langdon Mason. Where else can you go to have a world premiere of a play? Nowhere else, unless you're in Broadway.
That's right.
Some of the things that we continue to do, we continue to hold our ticket prices down so that families can come to our productions. We give a discount for the military. We give a discount for students. If a family of two adults and three children want to come, then it's $5 a piece. We are doing everything we possibly can to make it convenient and financially equitable for everybody to attend. We currently now have an online newsletter. I do believe that you will shortly start receiving it in your email. That's now going out to over 800 people. We are supporting the Empowered Players, which is an unbelievable group of young people that was started by a young lady when she was in high school here. And it continues on, and what they're doing is truly remarkable. And she is a truly remarkable young lady. As I said, we put out the handbills. We've established a capital improvement fund because we're now over 20 years old. And so we're responsible for some of the things that go on in the theater to repair, replace, update the soundboard, the light board. We are getting a scrim, which is a form of a curtain. We're getting that installed. So we are looking out for those things that are going to be coming up in the foreseeable future. I would hope that I would see your face at least at one performance between now and the beginning of May when the Plumatic Community Singers give their concert. If you had the opportunity to attend our Christmas concert, we had standing room only for both performances. So slowly but surely, we are getting more and more participants and members of the audience. This is what we're asking for is $10,000, a portion of which is comes from a matching grant from the Virginia Arts Commission.
So it's not from the state. I thought we got $5,000 in the past, and that was canceled out. That $5,000 was canceled out. So I think we made up with local funds.
They dropped it back the last time to 45, mm-hmm. my understanding, and you all made that $500 up.
Yeah, in the past, it's always been 10,000 is what we budgeted. 5,000 comes from Virginia Arts Commission. It's still coming from them. They've just reduced their 5 to 4,500, and you've increased your 5 to 5,500.
Okay.
So it was a $500 difference starting last year. We expect it to be the same this year.
Any other questions?
Yeah, it's a program in here, too. I just want to recognize Horace Grubbs, who is a high school teacher, and he's also, his family, they're Fluvanians. And his show is unique in that he covers a lot of the African-American events that have gone. Last year it was absolutely, it's absolutely wonderful. He draws a big audience at Piedmont because he directs the choir there. So I just wanted to...
Well, if you don't go to any program, go to Horace's.
Definitely.
All I can say is the children that are his students, I go away thinking, I wish I had had him. I was in high school, which was way too many years ago.
I think you mentioned the barter players are professional.
Yeah, the barter theater players are coming in January, and they are professional players. They'll be putting on performance of The Princess and the Pea, and afterwards they will hold a workshop for about 30 people who are interested.
Not to diminish the persimmon and tree players either.
Please don't diminish anything.
Ms. Booker, there was one of Horace's classmates that I don't know if we could ever get him involved with doing something
Bruce.
Over there.
Yeah.
Joey.
Yeah, Bruce.
Yes, ma'am.
Oh, yes. Excellent.
We're thankful that it's Mr. Scruggs that's singing and not another teacher we know.
Amen. Amen to that.
I'm not involved in that conversation.
I will take over on that one. I promise you we do not want that. Thank you so much.
You're very welcome.
Fluvanna Leadership Development Program, Mr. Beasley.
Left mouse.
Good afternoon.
Good afternoon.
I'm Mike Beasley. I'm the co-chair of the Leadership Program. Before I get started, I really want to say thanks to the board and to the staff, not really for the financial help you've been providing, but for all the time and effort and energy so many of you have put into it, driving a bus.
I apologize for having to back out this year, but
they
moved our games. We ended up playing half our games on Saturdays.
We appreciate it. No problem. Mr. Nichols is involved all the time. It's you guys have been great. You've made it possible for us to do what we're intending to do, which is to provide informed, educated, motivated people to volunteer for this county. And that's what we're up to. We educate people about the county operation. We encourage them to serve on boards and commissions, and they are doing so in a large way. This is our 16th year, our 16th class. We've been supported by the board the whole way through. We are now affiliated with the Virginia Cooperative Extension, and as I said, we get all kinds of assistance from you guys. The leadership program is governed by a steering committee of 25 to 30 people and a smaller executive committee that makes some decisions. One of the things we really do well is collaborate. We make decisions collaboratively to improve the program, and we do improve it every year. We have a leadership program and leadership succession plan in place for when Rudy gets tired or I get tired or other people. We're doing very well with that. And it's all volunteer, of course. The leadership program requires a pretty heavy commitment, as several of you know. Classes are typically 3 hours every other week from September through March or April, depending on how long we go. We meet in public and business locations all around the county. As you know, this is totally nonpartisan. The only goal is to inform people about the county, and the students ask questions to every class. We've done some things this year. Right? We've continued a new kickoff session that allows the classes to get much better acquainted and has really worked out well. We're continuing to update the website. We improve communication both outside and within our group, and we've expanded the ability of people to make payments online. We're always improving the classes every year, as Ms. Booker knows. We're launching an alumni group this year. We're in the process of creating it. And one of the great things about that is we want to encourage people to continue to serve the county in other ways. So that's what the point of that. Even during the class, people provide services to the county. We've got four major projects going on this year by the students. One is working on finding a way to improving the farmer's market. Another one is looking for a way to put a bandstand roof over the stage at Pleasant Grove. At least finding out how hard it would be and how much it would cost. Another group is working on making the history exhibits at the jail and elsewhere more accessible and also improving oral history. And the fourth one is developing youth opportunities in Fluvanna. We're expecting to graduate something like 28 students this year. We had our biggest class ever. We actually had a waiting list because we felt like we could not handle any more students this year. The average age is younger than it's been in the past. We have a really pretty good geographic representation and better than usual ethnic distribution this time. We've got outstanding people. And the waiting list is carrying over until next year, so we've already got a head start on filling the class next year. So what have we done? What have the 333 leadership program graduates done for the Vanna? So far, they've held more than 250 positions in government and elected staff and appointed positions. I think that number is actually low. We're trying to update this number and trying to document, but I think the number may well be well above 300 now. They also volunteer in all kinds of service organizations and things like this. This has been a big feeding ground into Fluvanna County leadership. Three of you are graduates. The Planning Commission, 3 out of 6 are graduates. The Economic Development Authority, 3 out of 8. The School Board, one is a graduate right now, and one is in the class right now. Zoning Board of Appeals is 3 out of 5. Partnership for Aging, 4 out of 8. Economic Development and Tourism Council is 4 out of 10 are graduates. Palmyra Beautification, 4 out of 5. We also have 2 of the constitutional officers and county administrators. Funding for we're asking for the exact same funding that we've had, as far as I know, forever, $1,000 this year. We've kept the enrollment fee for the students at $50. We provide some scholarships if people can't afford it. It includes the full-day bus tour. What we're paying for is the full-day bus tour, the graduation dinner, light refreshments at each session. We do a few office supplies, not many. One of our costs is we have to get background checks for new steering committee members. And that's pretty much it. We're on budget. We actually have a conservative cushion. We have no paid staff. We don't pay for any meeting spaces. And our financial records are all examined by an outside auditor at the end of each year. And so far, we've always gotten a clean bill of health. And so we're asking for the same $1,000 this year. Are there any questions? I'm glad to ask. Most of you know all about it anyway. You probably know more than I do.
I would only say you might want to add the number of county employees that have participated in the program as well.
That's a good question. We should do that. And it's a goodly number.
Yeah.
It's a goodly number. Anything else? Thank you.
I think that our program is becoming a model for other counties are reaching out and asking, how are you doing this? Can you help us establish one?
It was Gary Woods, who's the president of CMEC, grabbed me a couple of weeks ago at Tenasca Power Plant at one of our sessions. And he's interested in starting something like that. I think he's in Nelson County, if I remember correctly.
Yeah.
And he was asking, and I told him we'd be glad to help in any way we can.
Yeah, I think it's so.
I'm not driving in Nelson.
Can't thank you guys enough for all your hard work.
Well, again, thank you. All
right. Mm-hmm. Thank you very much, sir. Fluvanna Louisa Housing Foundation, Mr. Dan Burke.
Hi, folks. How are you?
Doing fine. How are you doing today, sir?
Had the pleasure of coming before you a couple times, but I'm still not real comfortable with this. But I brought some help tonight. Two of my board members, Ron Lozier and Beverly Stewart, are going to speak after me and help me out with this. And I ask your forbearance if I can pretty much read, because there's some things I did want to say. So, the Fluvanna Louisa Housing Foundation. Our mission is to help low-income, elderly, or disabled persons with their housing need. Our work is all about people and their need for safe, affordable shelter. We help folks who rent where they live. By administering the Housing Choice Voucher Program, we are helping income-eligible renters pay an affordable rate based on their income. We also help local landlords fill these rental units with steady, reliable paying tenants. Once a year, our staff meets with the tenants to confirm their current income and ability to pay. And once a year, our staff inspects each of the rental units to make sure that the landlords are maintaining a safe, functioning abode. We help folks who own their homes. Our emergency home repair projects help income-eligible homeowners pay for necessary repairs to their homes. Repairs often include wells, pumps, running water, heating and air conditioning, roof leaks, or replacement of roof shingles. Our foundation pays the contractor, and that's the big issue for most of our clients, is the ability to write that check out to the contractor. We obtain grant funding for some of the costs, and we provide interest-free loans to the homeowner for the balance of the cost. We use program income for these homeowner loans, and as they are paid back by one family, we then turn around and put it back out in the community, helping another family. Over the years, our foundation has built up a sizable loan portfolio of over 300 loans. It must be managed daily, but it also provides a continuing source of funds that we use specifically for the emergency home repair funds. And this helps us continue to help folks in the future. We help seniors stay in their home a little longer. We provide the aluminum handicap ramps at no cost to our client. And these ramps bring back a sense of mobility and relief to our clients. That's very, very real. Along with the home repairs, we are doing what we can to keep their homes warm, safe, and dry. We help seniors and other low-income folks stay in the community by renting one of our foundation-owned rental units. We were able to add two additional affordable rental homes in Fluvanna County last year, and we hope to continue making some small dent in this overwhelming demand for decent, affordable housing. And recently, what some of the job experts told me that they've done polls, and they find out that seniors overwhelmingly want to stay in their home a little bit longer. But by even greater percentage, they want to stay in the community. They don't want to leave the community. They want to stay here close to family and friends. And that's the need for affordable housing for those seniors that have to leave out of the family home, have nowhere else to go right now. And that has to be worked on step by step. So each and every day we are trying to help people. We deal with a wide range of folks all the time. People come to us every day with worry, concern, and uncertainty. We try to find a way to help them. While we have many happy repeat customers, for some folks the road to our door was pretty bumpy with rejection all along the way. But when we are successful and have achieved a good outcome for our clients, our jobs are very gratifying. So while our work is very people-oriented, it's good every once in a while to step back and look at the larger picture. These daily activities of ours always involves a lot of spending. We, of course, have to track and account for all our spending. It is easy to track the direct spending that we do with contractors and building suppliers. This spending helps keep local contractors busy, their workers employed, and bringing home paychecks to their families, and supply houses moving more of their goods. But this direct spending does even more. The academic economists would tell you that this direct spending on house construction and home repairs has a much larger multiplier effect and long-term benefit to the community. They would say that the real impact is not only the actual construction phase when this direct spending occurs. Economists say that later a ripple effect happens when these employed workers spend their paychecks at other local businesses. And even longer term, during what they call the occupancy phase, the homeowners are spending more to outfit and improve their properties. All this has real economic impact on the community. Throughout this time frame, of course, the local government is taking their share of fees, salary tax, sales tax, and real estate taxes. So, this past year, our foundation spent almost $500,000 on Fluvanna County projects. It includes the two new homes we built at Houchins Place, the purchase of another lot up on Deep Creek Road, and both our emergency home repairs for our clients as well as repair work to our home rental units. Over time, that money that we spent will be multiplied many times over to the benefit of the local community. And I must remind you that we also pay $5,000 back to you in Fluvanna real estate taxes this past year. So I am happy to say thank you for your continued support for our foundation operations. And I will also say you're welcome. If you agree that our work every day with our clients is making some real progress and improvement to the benefit of the citizens of this county. So thank you, and I'll let these folks take over. I'll answer any questions at the end.
All right. I have one here. What's the ratio of Fluvanna compared to Louisa in your spending?
In our spending, Louisa is much greater. Louisa is much greater.
Maybe 60-40, something like that?
Maybe 70-30.
Thank you.
We've, little by little, over the last 4 years that I've been here, I've been trying to change that.
Okay.
Good afternoon.
Good.
My name is Beverly Stewart, and this is absolutely the first time I've ever spoken to a board of supervisors. I am a new resident to Fluvanna County, and I hooked up with this organization this year, and it's a fabulous organization that I am happy to be part of. I am now on the board of the Fluvanna Louisa Housing Foundation. I would like to share with you some information about how we get together with our volunteers. The Fluvanna Louisa Housing Foundation collaborates with volunteer groups throughout the county to help our citizens that are in need with home repair projects. For instance, one of our projects was, well, we have a lot of projects building ramps for homes for people in need, and we have worked on a home in, on Shore Road to build a wood ramp, and this was done by individual volunteers from the Beaver Dam Baptist Church, and Tom Payne in particular. Another time we did another ramp by Tom Payne on Glenarvan Drive. Harry Winner and his crew from the Calvary Church built ramps on Miles Jackson Road and Rockfish Run. Fluvanna Habitat for Humanity, they came to us and asked us for their for help, and we worked together with this organization. So that looks like a good deal for both the organizations. And then we had friends come to us and neighbors of a gentleman on Albavana Springs.
Albavana Springs.
And helped them build a ramp for their neighbor. Antioch Church has delivered firewood to a person in need on Rising Sun Road. Examples from earlier years were we had a client in need of a new furnace, and between social services, our foundation, and five separate churches, we were all the costs for this client were met. Another client had a entry door in need of a new entry door, and our foundation and several churches worked together to complete this this action and covered all the costs. A local church group wanted to help a client with a new roof and paint the exterior, and our foundation provided the materials cost, and the church did the volunteer work and did the roof. Another local church group wanted to provide a new trailer skirting for a client, and our foundation provided the materials cost while they provided the needed work. And one handicapped client needed a stair railing to access the toilet, and church volunteers and our foundation totally covered the cost. So working together throughout the community has met many, many people's needs. And have some thank you notes. This is from St. Jude's Children's Hospital. A young boy was there, and his mother wrote, "Dear Mr. Burke, thank you for the help I received for the ramp. My son came home and in the house and was so happy, I cried." And then another, "Thank you so much for your assistance in building my ramp. You cannot imagine how easy you have made my life. Thank you." So this is really, really a good organization, and I am proud to be part of it, and I thank you for your help on it.
Do we still have a little bit more time to speak?
Yes, sir.
Thank you very much.
My name is Ron Locher, and I've been associated with the Housing Foundation since its beginning in 1989. And one of the trends that we're seeing here in recent years is this uptick in a need to serve people that require emergency home repair. You know, a slight plumbing leak that may not seem like a big deal if it continues, 6 months later, we're talking a major, major job. Floor replacement, floor joists, mildew, rot, all that sort of thing. So our biggest need right now to fulfill and address is emergency home repair. To illustrate some of the things that Dan and Beverly have mentioned in terms of trying to reach out into the community to get help, both financially and with labor, I'd like to just tell a couple of stories. And one of them involved an elderly couple who had raised five kids in their home. And he had had a stroke. He was very diabetic and became blind. And he was a big, big man, but had no railing to go up the stairs to the only bathroom in the house. And they had another problem. Financially, and that they were about to lose their home. And one of the things we try not to do is spend a lot of money helping someone only to find out it was a bad investment and they were going to lose their home anyway. This is part of the integrity we're trying to protect with our organization. So I reached out, called church groups, got a local contractor to give me a good price. It was amazing how many people stepped up knowing that that couple would probably be out of their house within 6 to 8 months. We got the railing. He was able to take a shower for the first time in about almost a year, I would say, and was very, very grateful for it. And we've since now gotten them into a home that's about 70% ADA compliant. And they're a very, very, very happy old couple. And we're very glad to have helped them. We had another lady who, I won't go into the details of how she got into her situation, but her roof needed to be completely replaced. Water was coming in, rotting ceilings, running down walls. It was a mess. And she did not even come close to having the financial wherewithal to address the numerous problems in this house. Knowing that she was in a situation where she was about to get foreclosed on, you know, there wasn't a whole lot we could do. I started reaching out again, and it was about this time last year, as a matter of fact, that I started putting this together. And in talking with her at our office a couple of times, she had this built up passion to start her own business. And I'm always leery about people starting up businesses that are not business type people. I said, fine, let's hear about it. And amazingly, she came up with a plan. I helped her develop a business plan. We helped her develop a business plan. I went to our board. The board decided they wanted to take a chance and help her repair the house. Now, she was going to need her house to fulfill one of the requirements of her business. And it had to be a nice house. It had to be a safe house. Everything had to be right with this house. The board took the chance, and this lady has since, and she worked on this business plan, came back several times. And each time she came back, she was becoming more and more energized, and now is the proud owner of a very, very successful business in a very, very short time. And she's in our community, and she's serving families that really need her help with children. And I think our board is very, very, very happy that we stepped out on a limb for this lady. So these are just a few of the things, a couple of the things that we do. But we're needing help now from organizations. We're needing to reach out. I think Mike is going to maybe join us next week to brainstorm some ideas to get youth involved in volunteering. We're always looking to church groups to do this. We're trying to leverage what money we can get to do things that need to be done for people so that they're living in a safe, dry, healthy home.
Thank you.
That's our goal. Thank you.
Thank you so much. Were there any questions?
Are you with the Habitat for Humanity?
Yes.
Okay. And you said that there are two houses at Houchins?
Yes.
Did you build those?
Yes. Habitat, I think, has done, they're up to their fourth house.
In Houchins?
We've done two, and we're going to be going under contract to buy another lot there from Habitat.
Okay.
Build another home.
So you both work at Houchins?
Yes.
Okay.
And they're also building market rate houses?
Yeah, we're also doing market rate houses. We don't want to be just one type of development. And it's going to be a nice community, by the way, when it's all finished. So, are you, any other questions?
Does anybody have a question for Dan? Mr. Burton? Okay. Thank you all very much for everything
again.
You did.
Thank you.
I take it back, I have one question. Will you need volunteers when you're doing the one on Deep Creek?
Or we could have contractors on volunteer.
Okay. We'll talk about that next week.
That would help.
Are you going to be able to join us?
Yeah.
That's our neck of the woods, so we all be able to find some folks who can help.
All right.
Good. Thank you.
All righty. Foothills Child Advocacy Center. Kathy Johnson Phillips.
Just left the mouse wheel to go for it.
Okay. Good afternoon.
Good.
Thank you for this opportunity today. As you may recall from last year, we work with children who've been abused and their families. And since 2016, we've been bringing services to Savannah so that the families don't have to come to Charlottesville. The first thing I want to say is thank you. We were able to continue to bring services to Savannah this fiscal year because of your support. And I hope that you'll be happy with the slides I'm going to show you and the outcomes of that support. So I just have a quick review of what child abuse constitutes in Virginia. The code talks about mental abuse, neglect, medical neglect, physical abuse, sexual abuse, and substance exposed infants. And Foothills works mainly with physical and sexual abuse victims. So I want to show you, get right to the statistics. This is a snapshot of the prevalence of child abuse in fiscal year 2018 based on Child Protective Services statistics from the Department of Social Services. And it says there is a mistake, it says mental neglect, that should be mental abuse. So you can see the blue is the number of accepted referrals, the orange is the number investigated, and the gray are the number found. And if you look at the red arrow in the middle at the bottom, and you go up, you'll see Fluvanna statistics. So in fiscal year 2018, there were 200 accepted referrals by Child Protective Services for those four categories of abuse. There were 50 investigations, and there were of the 200, there were 39 that were found. And that means that the preponderance of evidence said that the abuse happened. Another way to look at the prevalence of child abuse, and also to see how, if the program that we're doing, Bringing Services, is working, is this slide. So the top line, or blue line, are the number of accepted referrals by Child Protective Services for sexual and physical abuse only. That does not include law enforcement referrals. The bottom line, the orange line, includes both, all the referrals that Foothills has received and the children that we've served from both Child Protective Services and law enforcement. So if you look at fiscal year 18, we had 49 children served. And we served 39 were referred to us by Child Protective Services and 10 by law enforcement. I think the most significant thing about this slide is that it shows that having our staff come to Fluvanna and providing services is working. We are providing more children in Fluvanna and more families these evidence-based, proven-to-work, best-practice services than we did before when they had to come to Charlottesville. So one of the most important things that we can do to help a child abuse victim who is already traumatized and not to re-traumatize them again is to provide them a safe place to come and talk about what happened to them. And in Fluvanna, that safe place is the Department of Social Services. They provide their waiting room, a forensic therapy room, and an observation room. And we're very grateful to them for that. And the other thing that we do is we provide the services of our professionally trained, with years of experience, neutral, objective, third-party forensic interviewer. And she travels to Fluvanna to do these interviews. And she has been trained in child development. She knows appropriate questions to ask. She knows how not to leave the child. And she is able to get accurate information that helps the investigators to make better decisions about how to help the family and prosecution. So we offer other services as much as possible as we can to children in Fluvanna, and they're listed here. One of the things that we do is we are now, we participate in ongoing case review. We're a member of the Fluvanna County Child Abuse Multidisciplinary Team. The partners are listed up here. And with me from Social Services today is Kirby, and from the Sheriff's Office is Aaron. So we really value them. They are so dedicated to helping these children. And we're very proud to be part of this multidisciplinary team. So we do believe this program is working, and we really are thankful for your support. This slide is another way of looking to see if the program is working. The blue column is the accepted referrals for just sexual and physical abuse by Child Protective Services. And the next column, I think it's supposed to be kind of orange. I don't know if it looks orange, it might be more red here. Is the referrals that CPS made to Foothills. The gray is the referrals made to law enforcement. And the last column or row are the children that we served. And so if you look at this, the closer that the blue columns and the gold columns line up, that means that we're doing a better and better job of serving the children of Fluvanna with appropriate services. Here's another chart for you. This shows the total residents served. So I've talked only about children so far, but there's also caregivers. And so in fiscal year 18, with the caregivers, we served 81 people from Savannah. We are on track this year, only after 5 months of our fiscal year 19, to serve 89. And these are conservative projections. I always try to be conservative. And I'm projecting for fiscal year 20 that we'll probably serve around 100 people. It's really hard to project or predict how many people you're going to serve, because it really all depends on how much child abuse is reported and how much how many investigations are done. This slide just lists some of the benefits and how you can save money. A national study done says that investigations per case, if they have a child advocacy center involved, they're going to save over $1,000 per case. I don't have any figures or way to show you locally how much you save, but I will say that it does maximize the investigator's time. It provides them more time, it's less driving to Charlottesville. Hopefully with our professional forensic interviewer, they're getting better information. And then they also have our help in providing resources and referrals for the children and families. And then the victims, of course, can receive help where they live instead of having to drive and take more time off work. Perhaps they don't have transportation that would get them all the way to Charlottesville. And they have greater access to services. And it has, many, many studies have shown that if a child advocacy center is involved in a child abuse investigation, that the child is less likely to enter foster care. And so the last slide I have today is just a summary of our funding request. This program where we send staff out goes to 5 counties. In fiscal year 18, I have our exact cost up there, almost a penny, I didn't put the pennies down, of about $59,000. We, half the children almost that we serve were from Savannah, so Savannah's portion of that cost was about $29,000. In fiscal year 2020, I've already guaranteed coverage by a local grant of $9,000. So I'm still needing funding of about $20,000 for fiscal year 20. We have respectfully requested $12,000. I'm confident I can raise the remaining money through foundation or private donor support, because I actually was able to do that this year. So again, you have made a huge difference in a very traumatic time for children and families by helping us to provide the services to them. Thank you very much.
Thank you. How much did we give you last year?
$10,000.
So it's going up to.
Right. And that's just based on the number of children served.
Do you have any sense in terms of when a case goes through an advocacy center like yours, what the... You know, certainly I know you're focused on the advocacy for the child, but do you have any sense as to whether the case proceeds? Because obviously that's an important component of finding resolution.
Is
a case settled? Not settled is the wrong word, but is a perpetrator prosecuted? And at a higher rate when working through an advocacy center versus not working through an advocacy center, because there's better collection of information. Do you have any information on that?
So that is so dependent upon each locality and the Commonwealth Attorney's philosophy and attitude about that. So part of the Child Advocacy Center Multidisciplinary Team out is to put the child first. And so unfortunately, many times the only evidence that we may have in evidence is the testimony of the child. And so because you put the child first, and so say we refer the child to a mental health therapist, and they're gonna say that child cannot testify, it will re-traumatize and it will totally take him back to, you know, day one. Most of the Commonwealth attorneys in our area, and I'm sure Kirby and Aaron can help me with this as far as Savannah specifically, will put the child first, so they may not necessarily take that case to court. But there's always a safety plan done, always, so that that child is gonna be safe. And it's we follow up to make sure that the non-offending parent is cooperating. So I will tell you that overall our prosecution rate for all the localities we serve is 25%.
It seems to me that that sort of, and I understand exactly what you're saying, and you know, obviously it's important, but in a sense that creates kind of a cycle of silence, if you would, because sometimes these perpetrators repeat and you just, you know, if nobody testifies, then you end up with a really sad situation.
And I don't have a good answer for that. This model puts the child first. As much as possible, the offenders are prosecuted and charged, and there are sometimes plea agreements. One thing that I will say, that usually when a child advocacy center has helped a child, they are not re-abused. And I can show you our statistics that 99% of the children that we serve do not get abused again. And part of that is the education of the non-offending caregiver. We work with them to understand how they can keep their child safe. We give them the courage it takes to say to that boyfriend or girlfriend, move out of the house. You know, we try to work with them to do a safety plan so they're not letting their children be around this person. Can you help with it?
So I'd just like to speak to a little bit, and I don't have direct percentages or anything like that, but what I will say is that using this model and having Foothills come and assist in the facilitation of our multidisciplinary team, while she talked about how a lot of times the victims aren't able to testify because of their age or because of the trauma that they've experienced, however, having this model and having Foothills come and have that forensic interviewer do that interview and get that good information allows us as a team make a good safety decision for this family. And while it may not be prosecuted, it does help the Department of Social Services in making long-term plans of safety for the family, getting protective orders. And so while someone may not be prosecuted, that offender may be out of the home. They may be charged with something, but a deal is made to protect the trauma to that child, but there's also a consequence to this person. But because of this good information that they're able to help us get, the advocacy that they have with the protective parent, and it assists us in kind of doing our job and making plans of safety for the family, if that makes sense.
Sure. And I guess the last question on that, board would indulge me, is once that information is collected and the child becomes, you know, older and adult or willing to testify, can that information be used, and is there some sort of statute of limitations there?
Sorry to interject. Yes, it can, and it's very helpful for us. It's very helpful for us when we have this baseline that was already established at the time, because then it's a defensible memory, if you will, because it's been documented by a third party. It's been documented in a sound manner. It wasn't just, you know, in the old way of doing it, some you know, road deputy that just, you know, berated the kid into telling him what happened. It's done in a very professional manner. And so later, when it becomes time for that child, or even as an adult, to come forward and say, this happened to me, that investigating agency or the investigator that's assigned can then go back to that, and they have that good, sound evidence that then can be used to verify the victim's veracity, verify the memories that are being recalled, all of those things. So it becomes very helpful in the evidence.
Because to me, the telling statistic of the whole thing was the number since y'all have been coming in that are found. I mean, so you know that this, you've got the evidence that can say, whereas before,
right,
you know, 10% of the cases that were turned in were being able to be.
Well, and that's because with this model, kids are telling their very traumatic story one time. They're not telling it to someone at the school and then having to tell Aaron and then having to tell me and then having to go tell the doctor. And so it's one time that this child is telling their story, and they're telling it to someone who's trained to get the details that we need to be able to move forward in these decisions. So something else that I don't think that Kathy mentioned, that Foothills helped us get some state-of-the-art recording equipment that for our interview room over at Social Services that we otherwise wouldn't have been able to do. And so, I mean, again, I couldn't say enough good things about Foothills and what they've done for our community, especially since in the rural outreach program that they have, we're using them over half the time out of all the other localities. So I would just say that this is a great program for our most vulnerable and our most at-risk children and families.
You know, to go back to one slide, you had 200 CPS. I think it was the first one.
Yes.
That was over 3 years, yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
And those are accepted referrals.
Okay. What happens to the people who, when these cases are not founded, do they get any help?
It depends. So whether or not something is founded or unfounded means, in social services perspective, means whether did we have a preponderance of evidence to make an administrative finding so their name goes into the central registry. Mm-hmm. Now, we also assess risk to families. Mm-hmm. And when we're assessing risk, we're assessing lots of environmental figures that go into this. And if families are at high or very high risk, that while they may have an unfounded investigation, that doesn't take away from all the risk factors that they have. And so we are still providing services to those high and very high risk families, despite if they're founded or unfounded. So for us, this is important because, you know, it's showing how often we're using the Foothills. However, that doesn't, we're still following families that may be unfounded. Right.
Okay.
Thank you for asking.
And some kids are too young to even interview, you know, at forensic level, too. So those would be, they're not going to be referred to Foothills, mm-hmm. but they may still come into the system and be addressed by us or by social services.
Mm-hmm. I do want to say that prosecution issue is like a line that you walk to what you know. But I will say that we don't have, none of our children are re-victimized, you know. And by the same person, I would say the 1% that is are usually by a different person, not by the same person. And, you know, it's something that the Child Advocacy Center world as a whole is wrestling with.
Yeah.
You know, how do you keep the best interest of the child first, but still hold these people accountable?
Sure.
All right. So thank you so much for that information.
And thank you. Thank you.
Thanks so much. I see the Hospice of the Piedmont is rescheduled. So we'll move forward with Jaunt Regional Transportation, and Mr. Sheffield's not here, Ms. Davis.
Hello, how are you?
I'm doing fine, how are you?
Doing well. I'm Karen Davis, and I'm the Chief Operating Officer for Jaunt. And yes, Brad sends his regrets. He loves Bolivia, and he was able to make it today. I wanted to thank you all for your continued support for transportation within Bolivia. It's been interesting following all of these presentations because one of the reasons I've enjoyed working for Jaunt all these years is that we're not just about the buses, we're about the people we serve. Mm-hmm. Having transportation in a rural location like Bolivia gets seniors to programs that are important to them, community members to grocery stores and to work and to shopping. So we understand how those connections are important. Right now in Fluvanna, what you have is you have service within Fluvanna 2.5 days a week. You have 2 days of service door-to-door going into Charlottesville. This is primarily used for medical appointments, but it can be used for other things as well. And then you also have a Monday through Friday commuter service going into Charlottesville. Some of those commuters are people with disabilities who otherwise wouldn't be able to get to work. All of those programs or services are used regularly and well. I give you a handout. You do see that ridership is dipping, and it's only because we keep changing service to meet your budget needs. And so by reducing service each year, that's what's driving ridership down. We get calls all the time for people who would like to use more transportation services in Charlottesville, but we have to turn them down so that we stay within the budget that we have set with you. That's respecting, you know, your budgetary guidelines. And so one of the things that we wanted to really say this year is that each locality defines their public transportation differently. They might make seniors a priority, or they might make getting to work a priority. In Fluvanna, you provide a little bit for a lot of different people. So, you know, someone who maybe just trying to get around the community, someone trying to get to work, someone trying to meet their medical needs, which is terrific. If you wanted to start fresh and take a look at all the services and partner with us, we would be happy to do that. We have a new team of people. At Jaunt, we have a planning manager. We also have the expertise of Debbie Taylor, who I would love to highlight, who came today despite medical issues. Poor thing. She has 40 years of service, and she knows these counties like the back of her hand. And we're going to leverage her expertise this coming year to partner with localities to really look at the services we're providing to make sure that they make sense for you, the Board of Supervisors, and also for the community that we are serving. Are we meeting the needs of the community? I guess that's the first question. And also, Debbie also is very instrumental in bringing in agency service. And when we increase agency service in the community, that takes some of the financial burden off of the community because it's more shared. So that's something else that will be a priority for her in the new year as well. Before I go into the budget numbers, I also want to thank you for appointing Dave Feisner and Pat Thomas to our board. As you know, our board is an active board and decision-making board. It's quite large and lively. You're welcome to attend if you ever have an interest. They are terrific representatives for Fluviana. We're so glad to have them. I guess the three points that I wanted to make today is that we do continue to turn down people. We aren't able to meet all the requests. So you definitely have demand in Fluviana. We also want to make sure that we're meeting the needs for the board and for the community. And so again, if you have any interest in partnering with us, if you want to reach out to me directly, we can set up a meeting. Otherwise, we're perfectly content to continue serving you the way we are. And finally, the other point I wanted to make was that we're asking for a small increase this year, but it's just in response to insurance and healthcare needs. And so last year we asked for $93,000. This year we're asking for $95,000. And I think that's kind of my high-level overview of Jaunt. Do you have any questions about our services or the handout that I gave you?
We had more services in the past.
Oh, yeah.
So how much did we? Do you know where we lost, Karen?
It's funny. It was back in 2011. Mm-hmm. We had a very robust transportation program in Fluviana. I just started with Jaunt, and I just remember it was Monday through Friday within the county. We were serving quite a few people. That's when the economy took a turn for the worse. And that was the FY12 budget was where we were cut in half. And that's where sort of the downward trend started. In 2011, we were so efficient. Actually, it was a terrific model for us, and you were one of our shining stars. And so the economy is the economy, and we get that. But that's sort of what started the trend for decrease of services.
Do you know what the county's contribution was in 2011?
I can find that out. Send it to you.
I think it was $165,000. It went down to zero, and then it went back up to $125,000, I think. Or maybe it was $135,000, went to $60,000, went to zero, and then went back to $65,000. But both Javelin and Jaunt, actually fiscal year 13, it was in the spring of 2012. That was when I had just started. And they got cut to zero and then went back up to half funding. I can pull the correct number. During budget, you'll see all those numbers. You'll see their historical numbers, and you'll see what they are for each one of them. But it was Jeff and John that year.
How many individuals you serve?
Per month, about 400.
400 individuals or 400 troops?
That's a good question. Let me clarify that for you. I know that at least 400 trips. Individual trips, not just trips.
Yeah, one of the things that will be helpful this year for the board is if you can revisit, Brad will remember and others can pull it, but let's look at your historical ridership numbers back in the calendar year 2011 and calendar year 2012 before the cut happened in 2013, because I can throw out all the funding numbers, but we need some ridership numbers from back in the,
of course,
in the 10, 11, and 12 time period, please.
Sure.
Do you evaluate the riders, right?
Yes, we do.
You get, what are some of the concerns for the riders? On the bus, is it too long? Or, that's what I have heard that, but what do you hear?
And maybe we do survey every fall. And yes, generally speaking, especially in the rural country counties, long trips are hard because the midday service, with it being door to door, you know, we'd pick up a variety of people before it starts that journey to Charlottesville. With us keeping an eye on trying to get to Charlottesville by 10, we try to be as efficient as we can about those pickups and grouping them together and all of that. But yes, riders, it's a long ride when you pick up a variety of people and then take the trip into Charlottesville.
Okay. All right, thank you very much.
Thank you.
Appreciate it. All right, now next is Legal Aid Justice Center.
She was here, but and her coach still here, but she stepped out. Maybe we can go to the next one.
Okay, well, we'll move down, and that makes Mr. Boyles happy. Thomas Jefferson Planning District Commission. Mr. Boyles.
Yes, sir. Thank you. Hello, everyone. Chip Boyles, the Executive Director for the Thomas Jefferson Planning District Commission. While this is only my fourth year presenting a projected budget to you, our agency has been working with Fluvanna County for 46 years, quite a long time. As you know, we provide planning services to Fluvanna County, but also the city of Charlottesville and counties of Albemarle, Greene, Louisa, and Nelson. We work in areas of transportation planning, solid waste, environmental and land use, strategic planning, economic development planning, and community development to include grant writing and grant management services. One of our most appreciated services, which you're all very familiar with, is our annual legislative liaison efforts that David Blunt and our office has been working over 10 years with, connecting our local governments to the work of the General Assembly as well as the Governor's Office in Richmond. You should be assured that you are very well represented on our commission. We have a 12-member board. Mr. O'Brien is one of the members on our board, as well as Keith Smith, who is a citizen representative. The TJPDC right now has a 14-member staff, where 25% of the work and time that our staff spends is devoted to local, individual, jurisdictional projects. 75% of the time they spend is on regional issues. For us, regional is at least three jurisdictions or more within our region. During our most recent strategic planning session, our commission identified the need for the PDC to prioritize being the intersection of ideas, people, and action, bringing together people and ideas from all segments of the region. We work to solve common community issues, mostly through convening and facilitating. We currently have a balanced budget of $2.1 million for FY19. Of these funds, only 7% come from the local jurisdiction's per capita contributions. The remaining funds are broken out by 60% federal, 14% state, 17% local contracts, and 1% we get from renting out office space, meeting rooms, and interest on our savings accounts. The PDC brings in federal, state, and other revenues for a total of a 3-to-1 rate of return for the money that our local governments contribute to the money that we receive from other areas. So a 3-to-1 return back to our region. We've had a very successful year this past year working with Fluvanna County. I don't think I have to remind any of you that we finally, I emphasize that word finally, completed the work in Columbia, working with Steve, his staff, and a very active community in Columbia for the Columbia demolition and then park revitalization project. That was through a longstanding grant that the PDC had of right at $200,000. And though that was physically completed this past year, it's still an ongoing effort where our staff continues to work with Fluvanna County on that. Also, David Blunt has been working very closely with the Broadband Advisory Group and with Mr. Gary Wood and CBEC, helping to provide some mapping and data, working very closely trying to bring high-speed broadband services to Fluvanna County and a number of rural areas within our region and outside of our region. Also, rideshare, which is one of our services, continues to be a growing area in Fluvanna County. Currently, we have over 40 people that are using that service, and they're using that service from two locations in Fluvanna County, Beaver Dam Church and Lake Monticello, as well as a number of Fluvanna residents using the rideshare lot at Zion Crossroads. It's actually in Louisa County, but still a lot of Fluvanna County users at that location. We also participate with regional economic development efforts. I help represent our jurisdiction by serving on the regional Go Virginia Council with Tony, and also serving on the Central Virginia Partnership for Economic Development with Mr. Nichols. The Charlottesville Area Alliance for Age-Friendly Communities continues to move forward. I began my year as the new chair next month with that group. The group is growing into areas of identifying and advocating for community needs for all ages within our region. Mr. Curtis Putnam, who was here a minute ago, he represents Fluvanna County on that board. We work with other agencies like JABA, JAUNT, Senior Center, AHIP, Alzheimer's Association, and both of the hospitals within Charlottesville. A lot of discussion previously with some of the nonprofits on affordable housing. Our office helps, well, we staff the Home Consortium for our region, overseeing the home housing funds as well as the housing preservation grants. We continue to provide over $500,000 a year in affordable housing improvement funds within this region. Billy Campbell in our office works with the local housing nonprofits such as the Orlando Louisa Housing Foundation, AHIP, Piedmont Housing Alliance, and Habitat to both create and improve affordable housing within our region. Again, in FY19, the TJPDC staff completed an annual five-year rural transportation plan. That plan includes 26 recommended projects just within Fluvanna County. Fluvanna has over 8,400 people who live in Fluvanna and travel outside of Fluvanna for work every day. And you have 2,600 people who live outside of Fluvanna and travel in a number of transportation trips every day. And then you have 1,750 people who both live and work within Fluvanna County. To help accommodate some of those needs, the TJPDC supported four roadway projects in Fluvanna County this past year with VDOT Smart Scale funding applications. We hope to find out in late January or February how those ranked. As you all know, it's now a prioritization process for roadway funding. And in February, we'll find out the rankings, and the Commonwealth Transportation Board will make decisions in May of the funding. In 2018-2019, the PDC planning staff are working with the Ravana River Basin Commission, which Supervisor Booker sits on, and doing a corridor plan for the rural areas of the Ravana River. And that will include all of Fluvanna County into Columbia, into the James River. Recently, we completed a regional report by each jurisdiction of recommended best practices to improve the water quality of the Chesapeake Bay watershed. This comprehensive final report will be issued by the Chesapeake Bay Program in late 2019 or early 2020. We thank you. Thank Stephen and staff for helping us. Our board came and visited your library and held one of our monthly board meetings there this past August and had a very prosperous meeting. In addition to the ongoing and routine regional local services being provided by the PDC in fiscal year 20, the PDC is proposing to assist Fluvanna County with a grant for a business district revitalization plan for Fourth Union. We spoke of some of these at a couple of your meetings ago, and to develop a multi-jurisdictional small area plan for Zion Crossroads Corridor in conjunction with Louisa County. We're also beginning to putting together projects for the Smart Scale 2020 transportation funding program. Smart Scale is now a two-year process. You can't apply every year like you used to. So we're beginning early for the next round in 2020. We hope to complete the Ravana River Corridor Plan. And one of the bigger projects that we'll be working on is we just recently were awarded $100,000 to do a regional affordable housing plan, where we will look at it regionally and county by county to do a needs analysis and some strategic or strategy recommendations for each county in terms of not just affordable housing, but all housing. One of the things we really try to focus on is a comprehensive view in all of our planning items. And one of the things we're finding within our region, what is causing a loss of a lot of affordable housing, is that there's a shortage of market rate housing. And a lot of folks are buying affordable housing that can actually afford market rate, right, and it drives up the cost for all housing. So we were just awarded that grant a week ago, and we have in place, and we'll be holding its first meeting in January, a regional housing partnership. It includes for-profit developers, nonprofit developers, business community, financial institutions, citizens. Ms. Booker is sitting on that, as well as Keith Smith representing Fluvanna County. So, to complete all of this ongoing work, the PDC is requesting from Fluvanna County $34,273 for fiscal year 20. This is a $373 increase from fiscal year 19. The small increases due is that we have had a per capita rate of 62 cents per capita. I didn't do all of the history. It's been about 15 years since we've had a change in that. The $300 difference is that your population has increased since last year. And with the per capita rate, that's the $373. With that, that's just a very quick, brief summary of what we have done, what we hope to do, and I'll be glad to answer any questions for you.
Any questions? Thank you so much.
Thank you, as always.
Appreciate you coming out.
Yes, sir.
And last but not least, Legal Aid Justice Center, Ms. Boone.
I guess it's good evening. I have some annual reports.
Thank you.
You wanted to look at something shiny.
Good evening. My name is Elaine Kuhn, and I am the managing attorney of the Legal Aid Justice Center, the office that serves Fluvanna that sits in Charlottesville. I think a lot of you all already know that we provide free legal services to low-income individuals on a host of legal issues, including housing, health, public benefits, kind of all sorts of important justice issues in the state of Virginia. And I am the lucky person who gets to brag to you all about the work that we're doing. And also thank you, though, for your ongoing support in the past, but also for your continuing support in the future. I want to say I'm sorry that I was out for a second, and I actually did come in a little bit late because I actually love hearing the presentations from other people. We work, you know, Chip and I work on housing all the time, about affordable housing. And I also serve on a board that does child advocacy, so it's really a pleasure to listen. But, you know, apropos to our conversation today, I was actually meeting with someone who will probably be homeless as of December 28th, and is living in a hotel right now. So these are the kinds of cases that we handle, especially on the holidays. For some reason, it gets to me. So she's the house that she was living in had a pipe burst, and rather than fixing the problem, they painted over the mold that was growing there. And they failed the inspection, but she still has nowhere to go, and they're still expecting her to pay the rent. So these are the kinds of cases we take. I was looking at the case list for Fluvanna. I know last time I was here, maybe Ms. Booker asked me about our consumer law clinic. So we ramped up our consumer law clinic. UVA students represent individuals, and we actually had several Fluvanna clients. I think one of them was a car. It was basically a car that was probably broken when it was sold. That the client paid a lot of money for, and we negotiated that contract and kind of sent some strongly worded letters to them. We had several medical debt cases, as well as we did several wills. A lot of these cases I actually supervise. I supervise the students who got great experience working with clients. Our clients often get even better, wraparound service with our students because it's the first time they get to work with clients. They just have a really good time with it, and it really, pulls at their heartstrings, so they really do a great job. I saw that there were 67 residents who were served last year, but it's really more than the numbers. Another case that I wanted to highlight, mainly because I want to also highlight this medical legal partnership that we started. It's actually, we hired a health justice fellow, and she is here for 2 years, and she's actually co-located, meaning she has, I don't know if I would call it an office, but a kind of a space in UVA Hospital, as well as she's actually started to visit several other free clinics around our service area. And she actually received a referral through the medical legal partnership of a Fluvanna resident who we found out Social Security made a mistake and stopped her benefits, and it was her only income. So she went from she lives on only about $700 a month of Social Security income, but Social Security made a mistake and stopped her benefits completely. $700 is not a lot to live on, but the worst part in my mind is the Medicaid that was turned off immediately when she when her Social Security stopped, and therefore she wasn't able to receive medical care, and she's severely disabled. And as part of this partnership, our health justice advocate was able to turn back her benefits on, and also receive $2,000 of withheld benefits in the meantime. But both sad and telling is that she also, because of the way that we look at our clients holistically, we discovered a domestic violence situation that was wrapped up in that whole process, and was able to connect her with both the legal as well as the prosecutorial resources and available to her. So she's in a much better place now. This is jumping around a little bit. I just realized I forgot to announce to you that we have a new executive director. You may have heard of her. Her name is Angela Cholfi. She was both our legal director of child advocacy, so she represented children, from the ground up as a staff attorney, and then a legal director. Then she became our advocacy director and managed the big picture cases, and she has just started this Monday as our executive director. The last case I wanted to highlight is I was talking to my development director about, when you're making a decision as a public official, how do you kind of figure out how to make this decision, and how does legal services connect to the work you all are doing? And I had this one client who had an unemployment benefits denial, kind of an in the weeds case, but basically she wasn't getting unemployment benefits. But unemployment benefits is an interesting area of law because it's one of the only places that, even if you're not, if you're let go in an unfair manner, but it's not illegal, right? It's not like clearly, this is an at-will state, right? But unemployment benefits hearings are often the only time you get to kind of look your supervisor in the eye and be like, I'm hurt by what you did to me. So we represented her in that case, and we won. She got her unemployment benefits. But I actually keep in touch with this client, and she found a job not that, and she didn't have to go to, through that much benefits because she found a job not that long afterwards, and she is a contributing member of Fluvanna County. And you know, that's kind of what it's all about, right? Because we take a holistic approach, this is how we can help people become empowered. We can help people be self-reliant and contributing people in this community. So I just want to thank you for this opportunity to do the work that I love, and for all my staff attorneys to do the work that they love, and for your continued support. Do you have any questions?
Now, I know you have a whole lot of cases. Are there some issues that you do not address? I mean, I've tried to get in on some, on one or two issues, and just wasn't the fit.
Yeah, so we don't have that many attorneys, which is why more funding is always a great fit. So we do have to take, what I call this is like a ER, an emergency room approach. Plus, there is sometimes some confusion because the Central Virginia Legal Aid Society, they do all the family law work, right? So when I just described that domestic violence situation, we're not going to do the protective order. I've done protective orders in the past, so I can usually give enough advice. But what we do is our partner organization, CBLAS, handles those cases. So that might be one issue. But like in the housing context, for example, that literally is how many humans do we have in the office. I've started a pro bono service actually this past year with the Charlottesville Albemarle Bar Association, and pro bono attorneys come in for 2 hours every other week, and they consult with clients for about 30 minutes each, and I sit with the attorney afterwards and I say, don't you want to take this case home with you? Mm-hmm. And I convince them to move along with the pro bono case. So we're trying to expand our reach, but it can be hard because we just don't have enough attorneys for the need.
Mr. Chair, one of the initiatives that the CARE Task Force was working on, too, is trying to bring several different community town hall meetings and discussion meetings talk about landlord-tenant relations and landlord-tenant rights and responsibilities and housing. One more thing, I forgot the title of it, but we'll be talking to Central Virginia Legal Aid Justice, Legal Aid Society and Legal Aid Justice Center to provide some support for those training items. And we'll do that in several places around the county in the spring.
Yeah,
yeah,
we are active members in CARE as well. Right. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Well, I'm available if you have any questions. I appreciate your time.
Thank you very much. All righty. That will do it for all of the presentations for right now. We have to have Mr. Payne present?
He's here. He was coming at 5:30, so he meets over there.
I didn't make the motion.
That's what I was going to say, yeah.
You don't need him for the motion, no.
No?
No, you can go ahead. You don't need him here for the motion.
Oh, no,
he'll be there for close enough.
I figured that. Mr. Chair, I move the Savannah County Board of Supervisors enter into a closed meeting pursuant to the sections of Section 2.2-3711A1, Section 2.2-3711A5, Section 2.2-3711A6, Section 2.2-3711A7, Section 2.2-3711A8 of the Code of Virginia 1950 as amended, for the purposes of discussing personnel, prospective industry, investment of funds, litigation, and legal matters.
Second.
Motion made by Mr. O'Brien, seconded by Ms. Booker. All in favor?
Aye.
Opposed? Chair votes aye. We are now in closed session.
Reading the motion.
Mr. Chair, I move the closed meeting be adjourned and the Fluvanna County Board of Supervisors convene again in open session. Be resolved, the Board of Supervisors does hereby certify that to the best of each member's knowledge, one, only public business matters lawfully exempted from an open meeting requirement under Section 2.2-3711A of the Code of Virginia 1950 as amended, and two, only such public business matters as were identified in the motion by which the closed meeting was convened were heard, discussed, or considered in the meeting.
Second. Have a motion made by Mr. O'Brien, seconded by Mr. Weaver. Mr. O'Brien?
Aye.
Ms. Booker?
Aye.
Weaver, Mr. Seeger? Chair votes aye. Motion passes 5-0. We're now out of closed session. We will now reconvene the regular meeting of the Savannah County Board of Supervisors.
to order, and we'll begin with the Pledge of Allegiance, followed by an armed sign.
I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America, and to the republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
Thank you very much. All righty. Do we have an adoption of the agenda?
One unfinished business item, Mr. Chair.
Yes, sir. We're going to add the radio communications equipment.
For the three radios we talked about last time, we've done some research on that. Three radios for the state troopers and the conservation police officer that work in the county.
Mr. Chair, I'd also ask that we take on Mr. Schaefer's motion that the county support a resolution for One Virginia 2021. I know you mentioned that perhaps that should be on the agenda. I'll leave that to the sort of decision of the board. I think we had a chance to look at that. I think there's favorable consensus.
You want it to be on the next meeting?
No, I'd like for it to be on this one, but if you didn't have a chance to review and read it,
I didn't.
Then we can postpone it to the next meeting, but I would certainly like to see it on the agenda for the next meeting at the latest. So,
Mr. Bryan, to that point, if you want the public to be aware of it, it's much better to have it on the agenda. Mm-hmm. We don't have the document here or a motion prepared.
Sure. So no.
I was waiting for
to. That's fine. I don't have any objection to
that. Yeah, I just saw it on the iPad that you wanted it on the agenda. Yeah.
So we can get that on the next agenda.
January 9th, sir.
January 9th.
Thank you.
All righty. Do we have an adoption of the agenda with the changes so stated? Do I have a second?
Second.
Motion made by Mr. Weaver, seconded by Ms. Booker. All in favor?
Aye.
Opposed? Chair votes aye. Passed 5-0. Mr. Nichols, with your report, sir.
Sure. Just a couple quick things. From the hall. Oh, shoot. Something's wrong with the darn file. I'll open it from here.
There's those horses.
Yeah, I love that picture. We get some really great pictures.
Yeah, they're in step like.
These are all from community members that we get. We put on the website and have in the halls of the office and on our front.
That's a good picture of the locks there.
It is. Yeah.
The locks are there. Yeah. And this is the Ravana and Savannah
where they meet. Where the Indians are.
Yeah. On Lake Montchel. A lot of things. All done by locals. Southeast Rural Community Assistance Project does great work in our community, and we don't hear very much about them normally. They will be here at one of your upcoming meetings for a briefing for their annual funding request. But Mrs. Booker and Mrs. Eager.
I didn't get the picture.
Well, you weren't there yet.
Oh.
Mrs. Booker, Mrs. Eager, and I all attended the house dedication. They rebuilt this house down in Hayden Martin, for this gentleman. His family had lived there since he was a young boy, and the house was kind of almost gone, and they rebuilt it and did a really nice ribbon cutting with a two-bedroom house with nice amenities. And CIRCAP did that, and it was a really, really nice day to dedicate another great place for someone to live that they can afford in our community. So I enjoyed that a lot.
You and I were talking to him, and he said his father bought the 2 acres.
Yeah, for 40.
In the 60s, yeah. $40.
Yeah, $40.
Oh, wow.
Wouldn't you like to have some 60s era land right now?
Yeah, it's like $800 bucks.
Indeed.
Mm-hmm. But that was still money, $800 back then. You know, what it came hard.
And my first job, I had paid 65 cents an hour, and I thought that was great, too. So.
Yeah. Friend of mine's father owned the land where Lake Monticello is and sold it. I think it was in the 30s for 60 cents an acre.
Yeah,
oh, man.
You know, if you want to earn 65 cents, you can be a board supervisor.
Actually, that's probably about what it is.
It's
a little bit more than we get in the football game.
Exactly.
Yeah, but if you won more games, we paid more.
I know.
You guys did this year. It was great. The 4-H Club, Livestock Club, won the Virginia Farm Bureau annual hay bale decorating contest. Oh. Not only did they win the best agribusiness FFA or 4-H display, they got the convention favorite overall, beating over 35 entries. And you can see at the bottom right this hay bale that's been decorated. You belong to Flavanna 4-H. But anyway, that was their hay bale, and it's on display down at the community center. So they did a great job. So Joan Talley and Sandy Hopkins from the Farm Bureau presented that award, and you can go see it down there. So great job by all those folks. And for my new business, my family and I have been talking about this for a number of years, and we decided that this year is the time to retire this coming year. So I'll be retiring on July 5th. I've informed the board of that already. And I'm hoping that I can be a better goof-off gopher and golfer in my retirement years, and looking forward to it. And I've loved every second and been privileged to work here in Flavanna County with great staff. And while I will certainly miss everyone, I am looking forward to fewer meetings and more travel and doing the Camino de Santiago next summer, too. So that'll be a nice 500-mile hop.
And you know, Steve, the earlier you can do it, the better off you are, because you never know what the future offers.
Indeed. And my brother and I have said the same thing.
And your wife and family, do it now.
Indeed. And we've got great transition plans, and you've got lots of opportunities to, you've got good staff here already, and there's never a perfect time, but this is as good a time as anything that's right for my family and I, so we're pretty excited. My wife just sent me a text a little while ago, and she said, good luck, and I love you. And after 46 years, she still does that. Wow. Great. So, anyway. But thank you very much for the opportunity. We'll talk more. This is not till next summer. But the reason I did it on the 5th is because whoever comes in after me will have a full month until their next board meeting, and so that gives a chance to get settled in a little bit, because you only have that one meeting in July. So, and remember, you've got regular meetings coming up in January, but you changed the dates for them. So it'll be the second Wednesday and the fourth Wednesday, the 9th and the 23rd. You've got a budget work session on that second Wednesday. And then in February, you start your kind of weekly meetings with regular meetings mixed in with budget work sessions on some nights and budget work sessions in between. But busy schedule coming from now on through the third week of April. Any questions I can answer for the board?
No, sir. Thank you so much. So we'll now move forward with the first round of public comments. Anyone wishing to address the board should come to the podium and state your name and address. Please remember to keep your comments to 5 minutes on topic and directed to the board. Is there anyone wishing to speak at this time? Seeing none, I will close the first round of public comments. We do not have any public hearings on the docket. So I'll go to action matters. U, VATI grant for broadband in underserved areas. Eric Pollute.
Nope, Eric Dahl.
Big A.
Is there a presentation, Eric?
Yeah, there is.
By God, it was better than
me. People got to tell me about this.
He said you knew.
If he told me,
He's losing his touch already. Now he's like, oh, he's trying to check out. Details.
No, actually, what if he forgot that he forgot to tell me? So. And he was over 45 today.
Hey, you got to
tell me. 45th birthday. So.
That's right. Yep. That's right.
You're on the hot seat. I remember 45 almost.
So, the presentation we have before you in the action item is the VATI grant, VATI, which stands for Virginia Telecommunications Initiative. It's a grant for broadband in underserved areas. Is this? Oh. Okay, let's try this one.
That's nice.
Yeah. Okay, so the VATI grant, it's a Virginia Telecommunications Initiative. It's a grant program. It's administered by the Virginia Department of Housing and Community Development. Currently in fiscal year 19, there's $4 million available. Basically, what this grant program does is it helps to supplement construction costs by private broadband providers in partnership with local governments for providing that telecommunications, specifically broadband, in underserved areas. As you know, we're already working with CVEC on expanding the broadband to Flavanna County. And what we did was we submitted a grant to this program in partnership with CVEC for southeastern Flavanna County, basically the southeastern portion of the Columbia District. And once we go a little further, I'll show you some of the maps and all that. So like I said, it provides supplements construction costs, who's eligible. Applications are submitted by local government, Fluvanna County, and we have to partner with some type of service provider. And for this particular thing, it's CVAC. The grant amount that was submitted was for $641,967. For this portion of the project, though, the CVAC total cost to do this project, I think, if I remember correctly, was about $2.5 million. So, you know, CVAC's fronting a good portion of this money on their own. They're not asking for county dollars for this. They just need the county, because the program is a kind of a partnership, they need the county to submit the application, which we did. The deadline was December 14th. There was advertising, public notice requirements that we had to do. So it was kind of a short turnaround. So we went ahead and submitted the application for this program.
And the public actually did see it, because we actually had a lady come in and meet with us, wanted to know about the ad in the paper. She'd cut it out and brought it in. So other people have called about it. So it's good. This one specifically will hit that southeast area of the county if we get it.
And I've got maps up here to show you. Great. So specifically where it's going to hit. So you see like the text right there. This basically tells from CVAC where it's going to start and where it's going to go to. So if you're familiar,
the picture's a lot easier.
Yeah, the picture is a lot easier. So that's the roads. So anyway, here's Columbia down here. Here's the Columbia District. And this is State Junction. And this, yeah. So, and this is kind of all going all the way up here to like Palmyra. So they're going to try and link it up to, if you remember, they're starting on our project right now in the Zions Crossroads substation, which kind of comes in through Zions and Henson, and it's going to be coming down through 15. They're going to link up to that broadband
substation.
Yeah, from that broadband from there, and then bring it on down to that southeastern portion of the county if we get the grant. You know, they're obviously talking about, you know, doing something in that portion of the county at a later point, but just due to this program, it allows them to kind of speed up that process a little bit.
There's only $4 million available from the state for this, but the governor has just proposed $250 million over
50 million.
$50 million?
Yeah, I think we'll 50 million for this year.
$250 million over 5 years, yeah. I think. For the VATI program, so hopefully it will ramp up. But we might. This is a pretty good area, and we have a reasonable chance of getting an underserved area some grant money, and that would accelerate.
In addition to that, so CVAC is also partnering with other localities to submit for the same grant. I know they partnered with Louisa County to submit a grant. I think they're partnering with Appomattox too, and that's going to go down and kind of go to the southern portion of the county. In Nelson County also, I think they're partnering with them to do some grant submissions for this particular project. So they're really trying to speed up their broadband expansion to the underserved areas of their whole entire network.
Yeah, I have a question here.
Sure.
Due to the timing constraints, the county was unable to get the application approved by the Board of Supervisors prior to the deadline. How will that affect us?
It won't.
You just have to rattle. We don't have to actually have your approval.
Oh, okay.
We can submit a grant on behalf of the county, and they wouldn't ask. What is important is that you approve publicly every grant application, even if it's retroactive, because you can always turn it down. But we want you to approve it because of the strings that may be attached to it.
But we're past the deadline.
We already submitted
on the 14th of December.
Oh, okay. We submitted it already.
You're ratified. We're going to get it formally on your agenda before the 14th because you didn't have a meeting. So we told you about it last meeting, said we were going forward with the advertising, and then this is coming for you for ratification. We've already submitted the grant request. And any tail to this one? There is no tail to this one because CVAC will be paying any matching requirements.
And Fluvanna's got a good chance too, because like I said, they're only asking for $641,000 out of about a $2.5 million project. So it's a relatively low dollar amount for a percent matching from their standpoint.
How did you come up with the $600,000?
CVAC.
It's their engineering cost.
So they thought that was what there would be.
Yes. That's that portion of the entire
cost.
Yeah.
Columbia
right.
District line.
Yeah. So like I said, this is kind of showing you from a map of the area, and then obviously this is the whole CVAC portion of the county, but really what it is, where it's going to meet, it's the green area down here, and then some portions of the red area right here. That's what this grant's going to be for, is this whole kind of section down here. So which is good, because that was one portion when the county and the EDA did the agreement with CBEC. Those were not areas that were specifically mentioned that at that time, just because we were hoping that we could utilize some grant funds.
Remember, if you already have a plan in place to do broadband, and you're already funded a project, you cannot go back and apply for grants for it. So if you specifically name those, they wouldn't be able to apply for this grant. That's why we didn't name those before. In this case, the good part about it is if we do get the grant, it requires it to be completed by X date. So it will also speed up the process, which would be good for...
I think it has to be done within 1 year, too, of getting the grant.
With the new money that the governor's putting towards it, we may be doing more grants.
Sure.
Because that's just that one specific area, but there were other areas we did not name.
Yeah, there's
so we can come back.
There's the whole Kids Start area. There's, you know, the whole Fernwood substation that possibly they could do as well.
Yeah, this has been a good partnership so far with CDEC, because, you know, in 5 years, all the 8,700 customers will have access to 1 gig broadband. It doesn't mean they'll all take it, but they'll have access. But in our county, you've sped up that timeline. It's going to be even faster than that.
And we're hoping that they'll have... Do you ever hear any more from Dominion on whether
Dominion's report's not due until December 31st.
I knew it was this month. I wasn't sure.
And the governor's representative for broadband seemed to imply at the VACO conference that he thinks VACO will be interested in providing opportunities to be able to broadband in their areas. They don't want to be a broadband provider, but that means we could potentially use their power poles and get authority for someone else to be on their power poles.
Like, so that could possibly cover the rest of our county.
Absolutely.
Now, the only thing I don't remember when we're going to find out about this, but I would imagine it's probably maybe springtime, maybe.
Time.
You remember, Eric?
when we know the results of the grant.
It should be sometime in the spring.
Yeah. So, like I said, once we find out more, we'll let you know. But, like I said, does the board have any further questions?
No.
That's good.
Okay. Thank you so very much.
See if you can just motion to motion.
I just want to be happy when we get stored.
Someone will tell me these things.
I know.
I think I have a purple.
I move the Board of Supervisors ratify the advertisement seeking public comment and the application submission for the Virginia Telecommunications Initiative, VATI, grant. Grant program administered by the Virginia Department of Housing and Community Development in the amount of $641,967 for expanding broadband in a portion of the underserved areas of southeastern Atlanta County.
Second.
Motion made by Ms. Seeger and seconded by Mrs. Booker. All in favor?
Aye.
Opposed? Chair votes aye. Motion passes 5-0. Let's keep that train moving on down the line. All right. Thank you very much, sir. We have no appointments. We will now move forward with the presentation. V, 2018 Comprehensive Annual Financial Report. CAFR, Mr. Dahl. Oh, we're getting both there.
Let me go and pass out the CAFRs. We got the final CAFRs in. Okay, so I'm going to kind of just give you a big general overview of the CAFR. We provided you a copy of the final CAFR at the last meeting, so you've had some time to go through it. And then what you have before you is the final CAFR, which hasn't changed. It's just the bound copy from what you received previously. So what I'll do first, I'll just go over the quick budget summary of how we came up with our fiscal year 18 budget. So the total budget for fiscal year 18 was $75.6 million. Out of that, out of the expenditure side, 52% was attributed to schools, 43% to the county, and then 2 and 3% for CIP and other. Other basically being enterprise funds, cafeteria fund, things that are not funded through general fund dollars. From a revenue side, again, the same $75.6 million. out of all of our revenues, 38% of that total $75 million comes from the state, 56% comes from local dollars, 3% comes from federal dollars, and then 3% is other basically being fund balance, things of that nature. And again, just kind of looking at what we budgeted for local dollars. So this is the breakdown of all local dollars. Obviously, real estate's the largest percentage of all that. And then what I'll do, I'll go into the annual report right now for fiscal year 18. And if you have any questions as I go through, please stop me. Okay, so for fiscal year 18, actual revenues that we received, again, we're still at the same roughly, 69%, 70% of all of our general fund revenues come from property tax. We got about 17% from state dollars, and then, 7% other local taxes, which could be our sales tax, EMS cost recovery, things like that. Federal money, you can see we don't get a ton of federal money from the general fund, and then other is fund balance, basically. So this just kind of compares fiscal year 18 general fund revenues, showing what we did. Column B is what we did in fiscal year 17 for actuals. Column C is what our fiscal year 18 amended budget is. Column D is showing what our fiscal year 18 actuals are. And then column E just shows if we are under or over budget and just kind of what the change was from each fiscal year. And I'll just kind of go through and I'll hit some of the highlights. So general fund property taxes. So we did better by about $1 million for property taxes, and I can tell you $500,000 of that is one of the public utility companies from last fiscal year. Their dollars just happened to cross over from fiscal year by $500,000. Last year we were under about $500,000. This year they paid this year, so $500,000 right there. The other $500,000 is from better collections for real estate, personal property. And then obviously, once we increase our taxes for the second quarter, we get a little bump in our second half revenue. So that's the biggest portion of the $1 million. Other local taxes, the biggest component of that is sales tax. We did about probably close to $200,000 better than what we budgeted for sales tax. Recordation taxes were about $100,000 also. Going down here to these other ones, charges for services, $125,000 better. That's almost $100,000 of that is attributed to the cost recovery program. I think we budgeted $550,000. We came in right about, I think it's like $653,000. Miscellaneous is kind of like the biggest jump. Miscellaneous is the biggest jump right there. We did better by $419,000, and that's kind of like those are like usually one-time money, and that's 100% attributed to we sold both the elementary schools. We had some timber sales for the land behind the Fork Union Fire Station and the community center. That was about another close to $100,000, and then we also got some of our debt service reserve fund money back from Blue Ridge Juvenile Detention.
How about when we did the little thing where we made the extra money and we had that little window?
That's going to be for this fiscal year. That'll be for fiscal year 19. So all in total for revenues, we did about $2 million better in revenue this fiscal year than what was budgeted.
It was actually a quarter of a million bumped up to the UK.
Correct. It was. It was just a timing issue.
Yeah.
A quarter million of that should have hit last fiscal year, but it hit this year.
So we'd have been shy of last year.
Yeah, we were. So when you look at just the comparison of our top four local revenues, our actual revenues, again, this number right here is right. It's always been around, low 70% of the general fund are these revenues right here. Real estate taxes, 17 to 18 has gone up a little bit. Personal property, and like I said, Public Service Corporation, you can see went up 20% this year, and that's 100% related to that, primarily related to that $500,000 hit from 17 that hit in 18. And then local sales tax revenue, you can see we went up by about, close to $100,000 over last year.
It's been going up about every year,
hasn't it? It is, and you'll see a chart just to kind of get a better idea of what it's doing too.
the problem is we don't know when the bubble's going to break, when it's going to level off. Yeah. And so we've tightened it down so tight. But the million can't do much about it. That's if you raise the tax rate, that affects what we're going to record, what we're going to collect. But it was never budgeted for because we don't know what you're going to suffer tax. So it's hard to get much closer than this, but it's at least a good number at the end of the year. It helps us rebuild fund balance.
Yep. This slide just basically shows you that what you're talking about, Mr. Weaver, just what sales tax revenue has been doing from fiscal year 9 to 18. And like I said, we've had a pretty steady incline, kind of like from the recession years back in 09 and 10. So you've had a pretty good increase year after year. So
what were they in 08, 07?
It was a little flat in those years right there. It stayed flat for about 3-4 years. And I don't remember what it was. It probably went down a little bit at that point.
I've got years and years
worth that I can show you.
And how many years does the CAFR go back?
I've got the CAFR going back to 19.
No, but in this CAFR, does it have a chart that shows any back end?
Oh, yeah, there's sales tax, but it usually shows 10 years. Usually 10 years is the time period that we show, but I could come back another time and show you probably a good 20 years worth if you want.
Yeah. So we'll have that during budget season for all the revenues.
So this is just a breakdown, and I'm not going to necessarily go over them. It's just the general fund expenditures and what the breakdown percentages are. Obviously, education's the biggest piece of it, 36%. After that, public safety, technically debt services after that, 19%. Public safety, 17%, health and welfare at 13%, and then, judicial, general government, public works are smaller percentages. So looking at general fund expenditures, kind of the same chart from the revenues ones, is showing what we did for 17 actuals, what the amended budget is, what we did for 18 actuals, and then just if we are under budget and just what that change was. So let me go down here and see if there's anything that sticks out. Out of this general government, we may need to come back to you with an additional appropriation. There's about $50,000 related to the reassessment cost, the contract cost, that did not get started quick enough in fiscal year 18. So there's about $57,000 left over in the reassessment budget that they may be short on this year. So it was dollars that were unspent in 18, so that would be a good reason to provide that supplemental appropriation for fiscal year 19 if we see that's going to be the case. Public safety, E-911 was under about 70, Sheriff's Department, I think they are under about 80,000. Fire and Rescue was under about $200,000 of that, but if you remember when we did the carryover request, there was a fire truck for Lake Monticello that was budgeted for $175,000. That's kind of included in that number.
And you moved that money forward.
Yeah, you moved it forward. So, like I said, some of this that's been unexpended here, the board has approved carryover requests for some of it. Education, you've seen this number that they had unexpended $427,000 of local county dollars. So overall, from expenditures, we were about $1.6 million under budget. Now remember, some of this is kind of matched through state dollars, so it's not necessarily it's all general fund sales tax revenue that's supporting that $1.6 million. So general fund kind of results where we ended. So we did $50.4 million in revenue, $47.4 in expenses, so we came out about $3 million better. At the end of the fiscal year, then what we do is we transfer anything out that we pay out to the CIP or any transfers that we have for any of our enterprise funds. So our change in fund balance this year was actually about $1.9 million. I can tell you the biggest reason of that. So remember when the board decided to pay off some debt early, about $1.6 million for a literary loan fund. Mm-hmm. And then there's a few other little small components, but the $1.6 million is the biggest kind of change from the previous fiscal year. So that's why you see a little more drastic fund balance drop. So our fund balance at the beginning of the year was $22.7 million, and we ended at $20.7 million. So out of that $20.7 million, this is just a breakdown of how that works out. We've got, you know, some smaller dollars that are non-spendable, restricted. $6.1 million is currently still kind of committed to existing CIP projects that the board has previously approved. And we'll be looking at those as we go forward, and especially once we get new staff on board, and because we have some CIP projects that may have been sitting out there for a while, so we'll get a new set of eyes to determine if those are projects that still need to go forward, and especially go forward at the same dollar amount.
So that's money just sitting out there waiting for us to...
Yeah, well, yeah, the 6.1, the board approved these projects, and it's money to just...
Does that include the money we were going to spend towards on school?
Yes, no. Yeah.
The 3.75 isn't that committed.
It should.
No, it's an unassigned.
We never moved it.
No, it's an unassigned.
It's still an unassigned. Yes. You haven't committed it yet.
Yeah.
So we've logged it as set aside, but it's not committed for a specific project.
Specifically from here, since it hasn't been budgeted specifically to that project, it's kind of just in that big unassigned. So our unassigned is $14.5 million. And then out of that 14.5, per our target policy for what we say we're not going to touch, is about $8.6 million or $8.7 million. And then, so the new number starting out, and this is the number these numbers were in your Board of Supervisors fund balance memo. The 5.8 is kind of like the working dollars that we have to move forward to either one, fund the Zion's Crossroad project, if the board wants to fund CIP projects in this year's budget, or if they want to balance the budget, or whatever else they want to do. So the 5.8 is kind of the money to move forward with. This is just kind of showing what's non-spendable, unassigned, committed, and unreserved. And then just showing a 10-year history of the total general fund balance. And you can see from 17 to 18, we did take a little bit of a dip this year. But as I said, we've been pretty consistent for the most part. But this is pretty much attributed to that literary loan pay down that we did this year, principal pay down. And then the bottom one just shows what the history of the unassigned fund balance has been over the years. Any questions for that one? And then, Mr. Weaver, this is always your favorite one. Mm-hmm. Debt and capital leases. This just shows us what we had outstanding. For 2017, about $103 million. What we had outstanding for 2018 is still about $103 million. And it just shows the change. So the biggest change, basically the first one, general obligation bonds, that basically has anything to do with school debt. That went down by about roughly $3 million.
Out of 5 million.
Yeah. Yep. Literary funding, you can see here, we had about $1.5 million. We're at zero. State moral obligation loan, this is basically when we refunded the courthouse loan, the library loan, and we did took out some funds for the ambulance. And then the qualified energy conservation bond, this is basically the energy project money. Capital leases, this is for the radio project and towers. And then water and sewer bonds, you can see we had a big jump from 17 to 18, and that's for the Zion's Crossroad. Out of this, like I said, we're $103 million, but if you look at the CAFR, when I look back at note 7, it was about our total, if you look at long-term obligations, we're at about probably about $111 million. But some of that has to do with compensated absences, some OPEB liabilities. But if you're looking at straight project debt, this chart right here kind of shows what debt we've taken out to do either buildings, capital projects, things of that nature. Any questions on that?
Will you have a flyer for us to see our debt and where it is, because we're still paying on school renovations?
I talked about it
individually. And when is it? And when is it due?
Oh yeah. I've got a whole schedule. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yep. Yep. I can.
The lump sum of all the debts you're talking about is this slide right here.
Right.
So if you didn't do anything more and just paid your debts down by 2036, all the county debts will be paid off.
Right.
Now you will certainly do something between now and then, but the large bulk of that is the school.
Right.
The high school.
So here's just total debt as it pertains to our overall debt broken up by school, county, and water and sewer projects. You can see 3036, we'll be all done.
2036.
Yeah. that might have been a faux pas. Maybe it is 3036.
Mr. Weaver will be celebrating his 150th
birthday.
If we can run it out to 3036,
yeah, we're going to take on a few more projects by then. And then this just shows annual debt service by fiscal year. You can see we've got a big drop from 2024 to 25. That's when the radio project capital lease falls off. Then we got some small other pieces of debt that fall off in like 27, 28. But that's really kind of the big glossy overview of the CAFR. We had one change in auditing procedures this year that we had. It was called GASB 75, which we had to recognize some additional OPEB liabilities. But David Foley with Robinson Farmer & Cox is here. He'll be coming up just to talk about the audit opinion, if there's any management letter, if there's any questions for the board, and he can go into further detail on some of the other topics. So I'll let David step up to the podium.
Let me make a comment here. Looking on the information that you get, just interesting.
Sure.
We're talking about outstanding debt by type, in other words, the debt per capita now is $4,101. I thought that was interesting. And the total primary government debt was $109,987,000. Just showing you where we started off back, debt per capita was $3,807. And that varies all the way down. But our era is going up per capita. That's the only point I'm making.
Yep.
Well, you added the $8 million for the Zion Crossroads project.
Yeah.
And almost $8 million for the energy project.
Yeah, in the past couple of years, we've done about $22 million in debt for the energy project, which is supposed to be cost neutral, but we still have the debt out there.
Yeah, and you've increased population in the last 2 years, so that would dilute.
Yeah, but now we haven't increased population.
It's per capita.
Yeah, but population's only gone up from 25,691 to estimated 26,400, 26,500, so less than 1,000 since 2011, so 2010 census.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. So for 8 years, it's gone less than 1,000. But the numbers change for sure because of three things: the Zion Crossroads project, the E-91 project, and the energy project. That's what the big changes were. You did the middle school project too, but that was relatively small.
Yeah, that was $5 million back in 14 or 15. Right. So that's it. I'll have David fully come up, and if the board has any further questions, I can answer them after David, or David can answer them too.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman, members of the board, for having me here today. Again, my name is David Foley. I'm a partner with Robinson Farmer Cox Associates, and I was the audit manager for the county's FY 2018 audit. And we have completed that audit, and I'm here to present the results of that to you all. So included in the county's comprehensive annual financial report, there are three different reports from us that communicate the results of our audit. The first report from us is in the financial section of the CAFR. The CAFR has four different sections: an introductory section, the financial section, the statistical section, and the compliance section. And in the first page of the financial section is our independent auditor's report. And in this report, we state that we did perform an audit on the county's financial statements. This report talks about management's responsibility for the financial statements, which management is responsible for the preparation and fair presentation of the financial statements. It talks about our responsibilities as auditors, which is to issue an opinion on the county's financial statements. Also talks about how we did perform our audit in accordance with generally accepted auditing standards. And down at the bottom of the first page of the independent auditor's report is our opinion. And we have issued an unmodified opinion on the county's financial statements, which is the claimant's opinion an auditor can give on a set of financial statements. Basically, an unmodified opinion means that the county's financial statements have been prepared in accordance with generally accepted accounting standards or accounting principles. At the on page 2, number page 16 in the auditor's report, we do state that, and as Eric mentioned, that the county did have to implement a new GASB this year, GASB 75, which changed how the county had to account and report for its other post-employment benefits. And the other two reports from us are in the compliance back in the compliance section. There's two reports back here. So the first one is our report over the county's internal control over financial reporting. So as part of the audit, in addition to just auditing the financial numbers themselves, we also look at the county's internal controls that it has over its financial reporting to see that they're operating as they should. And this report was clean as well. We noted no significant deficiencies or material weaknesses in the county's internal control over financial reporting. And the third report from us is on page 209. This is our report over the county's compliance with its major federal grant programs. So as part of the third kind of piece of the audit that we do is for the county's major federal programs, OMB provides a compliance supplement which has a list of different compliance requirements that the county has to comply with when it's carrying out its and expending its federal grant programs. So we go through that checklist to make sure that the county is adhering to those requirements. Again, this report was clean as well. No significant deficiencies or material weaknesses in the county's compliance with its major federal programs. Also, no instances of non-compliance were noted as part of the audit. So all three reports from us and the CAFR were clean. And in addition to the three reports in the county's CAFR, we issued our standard communication letter to discharge with governance. This is a separate letter outside of the county's CAFR. What this letter is audit standards require that we communicate certain things to you all at the end of the audit. We do so in the form of this governance letter. Just briefly go through those with you all. Some qualitative aspects of accounting practices. Again, we state that management is responsible for the selection of and use of appropriate accounting policies. We say here again that the county did implement a new GASB in preparing its financial statements this year, GASB 75. Accounting estimates. Accounting estimates are part of preparing the financial statements. Some of the estimates involved are management's estimate of useful lives in preparing its calculating its depreciation expense for its capital assets. Also, the estimate for the pension and OPEB liabilities is an estimate that's prepared by an independent actuary to come up with what those liabilities are. Difficulties encountered in performing the audit. We had no difficulties in dealing with management as part of the audit. If we had any, we'd have to disclose those to you all. Eric and his staff, and really all the county staff, do an excellent job preparing and getting ready for us to come to do the audit, as well as when we're here performing the audit. They do a great job of answering the questions that we have and pulling the additional information. So they're very cooperative and always are providing us the information that we need. Corrected and uncorrected misstatements. There were no uncorrected misstatements. Any adjustments that we had were made by management wasn't posted to the county's accounting system so that the county's records agree with what's in the report. And really, we had very few audit adjustments, which speaks to the strength of the county's finance department. It's not too often that you go through an audit and really hardly have any audit adjustments. Really, the only adjustments we had was just helping the county record the new GASB 75 requirements and also some of the pension stuff. But, you know, really no significant adjustments. So, again, I think that speaks to the strength of the county's finance department. Disagreements with management. Again, we had no disagreements with management. If we had any, we would have to disclose those to you all. Management representations. We do request certain representations from management, which we get that in the form of a signed letter before we issue the final report. And lastly, management's consultations with other independent accountants. As far as we're aware, management does not consult with any other independent accounts in terms of second opinion shopping. Again, it was a clean audit. The audit also was finalized and sent to the state by the state reporting deadlines by November 30th, so the audit was turned in on time. But that's all I have. I'd be happy to answer any questions.
What were several of the questions that you did ask of management during the county?
There's a lot of different questions that we asked. You know, we asked go over procedures that the county carries out. We send out fraud questionnaires as part of the audit that we have various counties employees prepare. You know, for looking at accounts, and we'll ask for documentation, and you know, we may look at documentation and have questions about it. So we'll ask questions about stuff we look at. So, and it's, we spend a lot of time during the audit, you know, communicating and talking with management and staff.
Thank you.
I did note on the internal report on paragraph 2, you mentioned Donald Eagle Eye Weaver, scrupulous efforts to review the consent agenda. And,
it's probably
accounts payable contributed to the outstanding report. So just wanted to make note of that there.
That is an added level of control.
It is.
the board is.
I should get a star for that.
Just hang around for another 10 minutes.
I think we should amend the name of the building to Eagle Eye Weaver.
Well, there's five elements of internal control, and the first element is the control environment, and that's
the board.
The board, it starts with the board, so.
Absolutely.
It's their two say.
All right. Thank you so very much. We do appreciate it. Any other questions? All right. Thank you.
Thank you.
All right. We'll move forward with W. Fuzz, the update. Mr. Dahl.
Oh, I'll just quickly, Mr. Chair, I just want to say outstanding job to the finance department for the commendations
thank,
that we're
thank
given
goodness
by the
for Lil Larry coming in empty mouth.
That's right.
Exactly.
Almost
I'm
perfect.
Here for keep them straight.
Yeah.
boy, if he only knew. Someone asked him.
Hey, you can tell by the smile on his face the truth of that comment.
Okay, so the last thing is the Fort Canyon Sanitary District FUSDI loan. So if you remember, every year the FUSDI has an outstanding loan. Last year and every year we have to basically set it up for maturity 1 year later, and we can't extend it at that. And if the board chooses, they can either one, if FUSDI has the funds, to have them either pay it in full, or they can basically extend it and do like another refunding bond to extend it. So we're just going to go over, talk about where they ended up, what kind of dollars they have, and just kind of where the loan's been. So again, the following options, continue to make annual repayments. Since the Board of Supervisors is the governing body of the Fort Canyon Sanitary District, they can authorize issuance of a refunding bond. If the board decides that they want to kind of move forward with that on the January 9th meeting, I would come back with some documents basically issuing a new dollar amount that's outstanding, and you know, basically showing that maturity is going to be one year from now, to keep it short and sweet.
2019,
correct.
I'm on schedule with that, Brad, to handle it pretty well now.
Sure.
We're on schedule with this pretty well now. This renewal each year.
I think so.
Yeah.
Okay.
The maturity day was actually December 15th, so I'm bringing it to you now to see, do you want Fuzzy to pay it in full, or do you want them to, or do you want us to keep on going forward and, you know, going through and doing an annual repayment? So for fiscal year 19, $15,000 is budgeted in the budget to repay the county. As we're working on the fiscal year 20 budget, we haven't determined what amount to pay back yet, if that's the route that the board chooses to go. Or, as I said, option two is pay the note in full now, which the outstanding amount is $67,100. And if that's the case, the county, when we're saying paying it in full, it's no more than me doing a journal entry just reflecting that the money's kind of transferred from Fuzzy to the county.
Do they have $67,000?
So that's what I'm going to show you right here. Okay, so this kind of goes back to showing, going back to fiscal year 10 when the first kind of Fuzzy loan was taken out. So we've got three columns: fiscal year loan, what money was loaned to Fuzzy, what principal was paid in what fiscal year, and then kind of what their cash balance was at the end of the year. So you can see back in fiscal year 10, $40,000. You know, they brought them to 28, 19, and then they got down to like $3,000. And then the county did again in fiscal year 13, $30,000, which just kind of kept them right at neutral. Fiscal year 14, $39,000, kind of kept them at neutral. Fiscal year 15, $9,000, kind of kept them at neutral. Right around that point is when Mr. Stevens kind of implemented the new rate structure for FUSD. The board implemented it.
He did some great work putting that together. He created a plan, and you all approved it.
Yep. Yes.
And it's made all the difference.
Yeah, really good.
So you can see right here, you know, we had plans to pay back $18,000, which was, and that brought, you know, end of the year cash balance at $14,000 for fiscal year 16. We paid back almost another $18,000 and $17,000. End of the year cash balance was about $56,000. Fiscal year 18 for per the CAF, or what we just finished, they paid back $15,000 and some change, and they ended up their cash balance with $118,000. So currently, as of November 30th, I just pulled a bunch of documents today, the kind of cash balance right now is $140,000.
Do they need to make, there was some discussion about adding a new well and or renewing some of the pumps there, if I recall.
It's within operating cash to do that.
Yeah.
Even if we were to repay back.
Well, yeah, I mean, if you see right here, we're at $140,000 cash. So if we even pay back the $67,000, you're still at, you know, about half that.
You'll be in great shape because of what Mr. Stevens had put together, the FUSD staff, and what you all approved. And if you pay the full thing back now we don't have to fiddle with it. Not that they won't need something 10 years from now, maybe, but we don't have to fiddle with it. And oh, by the way, there's still a good cash reserve, and will be built up again in fiscal year 19 to add to it.
We'll
have a cash reserve that they're building to do big capital maintenance for the system.
Let me just bring up one thing, too. If you remember correctly, too, for fiscal year 19, we kind of did a change in how we're budgeting and how we're allocating costs because we created a public utilities department. And what we're doing, all the employees are kind of under that public utilities department because, you know, all the folks that work on Fuzzy, that work on Palmyra Sewer, they also work on the water system for this courthouse, which isn't part of Fuzzy. They work on the water system at Pleasant Grove Park. They work on the wastewater treatment plants for the schools.
Their dollars were getting charged to Fuzzy, so that is how to fix it, too, because of the new plan.
What was the
allocated costs?
I don't know what the exact figure is. I mean, but what we've done is basically anything that is what we call a shared cost or personnel dollars fall into this, like, public utilities budget. If it's, like, a specific motor fix for Fuzzy, that gets charged 100% to Fuzzy. If it's a specific, you know, other type of operational fix for Palmyra Sewer, that gets coded to them. But what we do is we have all the personnel dollars in public utilities, and based upon me and Mr. Stevens, we
prorated things.
We basically gave them a percentage
each function. Yeah. They spend 40% of their time in FUSD, then 40% of their salary gets charged to FUSD, or sewer, or water, or things like
that. And so this new model for fiscal year 19, that also is reflected in here, that we think that the costs are more appropriately getting charged to each of the enterprise funds, FUSD, sewer, and going forward, Zion's Crossroads, too. So what the game plan is when more employees need to come on board, they come into public utilities, and then we just allocate those costs out, you know, based upon what the percentage of time is, you know, for the shared costs for, you know, each kind of little system. So I think from that standpoint, too, I think you're going to see, one, with the rate increase, and then with just this kind of new method for, you know, better accurate cost accounting for what's attributed to each system, I think you're going to see the cash balance kind of continue to go up, too, because I don't think FUSD or sewer are necessarily being charged for things or the time that's not attributed to them. So.
And we have been having a lot of the breakdowns. One time we were having a lot of problems.
Yeah, not in the last year. They did a lot for 3 years before that.
It was pipe after pipe after pipe.
There's still a lot that needs replaced, but they've got things stabilized and done the worst part, and their finances are stabilized. Mm-hmm. So. It's been a good run.
And we need to make sure we watch that closely and make sure that if it's an increase that we need to do it. And we waited so long before we...
Didn't have money there. Mm-hmm.
We're gonna be recommending a 1 cent increase or a certain percentage increase to the FUSD rates, because it's been 3.5 or 4 years since we did it. Make a small adjustment. Mm-hmm. And then 3 or 4 years down the line, make a small adjustment. Right. Don't just let it sit at nothing, because otherwise you're not building up your reserves to pay for your system. Mm-hmm. So
remember, out of that $67,100, we already really had $15,000 in the current year budget. So you're really saying, do you want to pay another, you know, 50-some thousand above and beyond what's already been budgeted in there to pay off? So that's, like I said, that's really all I have to present. Whatever way the board wants to go, you know, I'll come back with that either one, we'll make the payment and it's paid in full and done, or I'll come back with the appropriate documents at the next board meeting to kind of extend this bond for FUSD and note going forward.
And what's on the screen is what staff recommends. We think you ought to pay it now.
We need to have a time to celebrate and be on our own.
It's a Christmas present for Mr. Weaver. We paid that debt.
Good. I mean, you all made this happen along with Mr. Stevens' hard work and the staff and the FUSD staff.
It's supposed to be, isn't it?
Good job.
I like it.
Yeah.
And plus, the cost allocation plan is going to help a lot.
The group down there, I mean,
they're all okay, but, you know, we're still looking for new people for that place.
If we can get a couple of businesses to go down there, that'll make a huge difference.
Yeah. Yep.
So what's the direction of the board?
Pay that.
They might as well pay it while they got it.
So we'll get that on your next agenda.
Yeah, well, I mean, there's really nothing that needs to be done. We'll let you know that we've made the adjustment in the system, and then basically that bond that's outstanding will just be paid in full.
I'll put it probably in my brief so it's on the record that you've actually done that.
Thank you. I'm ready.
All right, we will now go forward with the consent agenda. XYZ, minutes of December 5th, 2018, Ms. Harris. A, accounts payable report, Mr. Dahl. B, Colonial Circle application fees refund request, Ms. Robinson. C, CRMF request, domestic water tank at FCHS repair and cleaning, Mr. Striblin. D, CRMF request, FCPS FMS fire alarm, Mr. Striblin. E, FY19 emergency management budget transfer, Mr. Polite. F, open space contract for Stephen D. and Victoria P. Melton, Mr. Sheridan. G, FY19 Sheriff's Department insurance claim, 2012 Dodge Charger, VIN 2942, Mr. Polite. And H, Fluvanna Partnership for Aging Bylaws Revision, Mr. Spencer. Mr. Weaver.
Okay, accounts payable. I have two questions on that.
Yes, sir.
All right, 254. On accounts payable, it's the library door.
What line, sir?
254.
Oh, 254.
254. $3,896.
No, it's not line 254.
Line 254?
No.
Library door. Where's the library door then? I have marked number, page 254.
Oh, 254. We don't have the page 254. Hold on. It's on their packages.
Yeah, it's on the packet.
What's the line number?
Well, that's what I am giving.
He has it written down. He's not looking.
Yeah, I'm not. I've done that already.
Okay, here it's on screen. It's line 647.
Library door installed.
Yeah. At the library.
3,000.
896. Yeah.
Woo.
I'm assuming that's the new glass doors, the insulation doors, but I don't know. I'll have to ask.
Eric, can you write that down?
Yeah.
Doors.
We'll take a look at that and we'll get back with you on that one.
What about that 51 mean?
You know what? I wonder if that's for. What's the address of the sheriff's department? I'm thinking it's 51 Commons Way or something. Maybe that's the library. We'll take a look and we'll give you an explanation.
We can only see part of the description, so it's hard to tell from here.
Yeah, definitely.
I think it's probably not more than one thing, but I'll look into that.
And then the other one, then, you know, you can get back later. I brought this up before, and I don't remember the answer on it. But under the landfill, I have marked 259. I must have gotten some different numbers or something. But on the landfill hauling, you have $432.60. And I'm still a little bit confused. We have haulers for the landfill, and we pay them. What are we paying somebody else? Is that the one that goes to the high school? What is that?
I don't know what you said, sir.
Okay. There's a bill in there on the landfill hauling.
You have dumpsters down there that when you bring your trash to the convenience center,
right?
You put it in that compactor, the dumpster for the compactor is,
uh-huh.
That company then hauls that trash away.
Mm-hmm. No, but those are in the thousands of dollars. This is just like an independent hauler or something. $432 wouldn't cover those.
That could be tires. It could be petroleum oils and lubricants. It could be refrigerators. Because remember, all those things, different folks haul those things.
You're talking for Ruhlman's Hauling, line 846, I think.
That's probably is. I have marked 259. I don't know why my numbers.
Well, you have page numbers in the package, the board package. We don't have the same numbers on here.
Yeah, evidently. So that makes it confusing.
What line?
It's line 846. Ruhlman's Hauling.
Yeah, 432. Hall. Yeah, landfill haul. I don't know what the specific was, but Ruhlman's hauls stuff in there all the time. But it's not the big dumpsters.
No, it's thousands of dollars.
It's a specialty thing. It's either the tires or the refrigerators or the because we accept different things in different locations. One company does all the trash.
Right.
But some companies do the tires, some companies do the petroleum.
So they're doing specialty.
I'm assuming that's it. I don't know.
But that's what I'm trying to figure out.
This guy has a dump truck.
We'll have to look into that, Ms. Weaver, because that's kind of it's not a typical thing. I mean, obviously,
I know it's not
like VFI is the typical.
Ruhlman's is a normal routine expense from landfill. We'll get you what the details are. I don't know all the details. I just know it is. I've reviewed this one before.
Yeah, we talked about it.
We'll pull it up.
Okay. Sorry. And then the last one, it's under duplicates. It's the last tab. It's under attachments.
Okay. Oh, okay.
Yep. It has no number as such. And the question on that one is, if you'll notice, there's a $72,001 bill on page 307, and on page 309, there is again another bill of $72,001. They're duplicate bills, and yet they're subtracting from a major figure. Why would we have duplicate bills subtracting from those figures?
Ms. Riott, I'm not sure. If you had a line number, I could look specifically at it. I'm just not sure.
The last one on the...
Okay, here it says school capital reserve. Maybe I give you it.
Okay, school capital reserve.
Yes, yeah. Budget allocations.
What did that ever mean, sir?
It's in the end. It's the end.
Oh, capital reserve maintenance fund?
Huh?
You're talking about the capital reserve maintenance fund?
Yeah, that's what you all have it listed as.
But it's not.
You have it listed under attachments.
The 72 and the 72?
Uh-huh.
Because you approved putting money back in from the school's project, the middle school project. You put it back in debt proceeds, back in
the school's face.
And then you approved it to move it to the capital reserve maintenance fund request, and then you said you can expend it on that thing. So the middle school had $72,000 left on their major project they do.
Okay.
And you said, okay, it can't be used for anything but middle school stuff. You put it back in fund balance, and then you approved reallocating it to use it for Abrams renovations.
Yeah, they had 100 left over, and then you said you got that 100, you can use 72 to put it back into the CRM, and then they made a request for the Abrams abatement.
And I'm not sure if we said it could only be used for middle school.
Or no, the debt could only leave, so you approved it to put it back in fund balance.
Yeah.
Right. Later on then, you honored the school's request to use some money out of fund balance for that. That's why
it sort of looks like a double increase. I'm so
remember the green is a plus.
But I've never read
that. No, they're not.
Okay.
Look up on the screen, sir.
Green is
see the green is a plus on the screen.
On the screen.
And the same in your pocket.
I know screen, but I'm looking at mine. That's what the only thing I can go by.
You see it's in color?
It should be in color, I believe.
It is. Yeah.
No, they're both red.
It's minus.
That's red. So right here.
Right.
It looks green to me.
You're right. Okay, there's a red and a green.
Yes. Yeah, the green is the good one. The
it's Christmas, guys.
That's where it
went. And then there's another red.
And the minus came out. Right. It was an accounting transaction that you all approved.
Christmas with all the
that's our Christmas lights. Report for you, Mr. Weaver.
It doesn't get any better, does it?
Some days.
Oh, gosh. Okay, you want a motion?
Sure.
I would love one, sir.
Mr. Chair, I move to pay the accounts payable with the motion for the accounts payable and payroll be ratified for November 2018 in the amount of $4,119,345.46.
Second.
Motion made by Mr. Weaver, seconded by Mr. O'Brien. All in favor?
Aye.
Opposed? Chair votes aye. Motion passes 5-0.
I need some help on all this.
All right. Gentlemen. Now we're going to go through the unfinished business is going to be the thing I brought up for you, and there's the motion. If we would like to do the radios so that we can equip all the state troopers, and we've checked with everyone and made sure it's kosher with everybody that they have a radio.
In bullet form, there are additional deputies and a conservation police officer that covers our county. If you put radios in their cars, when they're on duty, they will already have communication with us. If it's an emergency and they're called out, they will have communication with us. So that's what this purpose of this is. And the new radios that would be out of the E911 budget, so you're moving out of BOS contingency to the E911 budget to buy the three radios.
And that's all they needed was three. Everybody else is done.
It's five. It they already had three. They already had
actually wasn't in the budget.
It wasn't in the formal budget because no one ever thought of it before.
What we thought about doing was we bought three and said, y'all just drive to the sheriff's office and come check them out. Well, that driving time from their house, or if they got something else going on, they don't have a radio, can't communicate with that.
Or if they're broken up for
response time.
They have no
response time. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. So I think
it's a great idea.
It's something I think will go well. Ms. Booker,
right. I move to approve a transfer of $12,000 from fiscal year 19 board contingency to the fiscal year 19 E911 professional services budget for the purchase of three additional handheld radios to allow locally assigned state troopers and conservation police officers to have an assigned radio for in-car communication with the sheriff's office while on duty and for off-duty emergency response.
Second.
I have a motion made by Ms. Booker and seconded by Ms. Seeger. All in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Chair votes aye. Motion passes 5-0. Thank you very much, folks. That will be a plus for our county. Is there any new business? Hearing none, I will now open the second round of public comments. Anyone wishing to speak to the board, you come to the podium, state your name and address, keep your comments to 5 minutes, and direct it to the board. Is there anyone wishing to speak at this time? Seeing no one, I'll now close the second round of public comments.
Mr. O'Brien.
Mr. Chair, I move the Savannah County Board of Supervisors to enter into a closed meeting pursuant to the provisions of Section 2.2-3711A1, Section 2.2-3711A5, Section 2.2-3711A6, Section 2.2-3711A7, Section 2.2-3711A8 of the Code of Virginia 1950 as amended for the purposes of discussing personnel, prospective industry, investment of funds, litigation, and more.
Appeal.
A motion made by Mr. O'Brien, seconded by Mr. Weaver. All in favor?
Aye.
Opposed? Chair votes aye. Motion passes 5-0. We're now back in closed session. You will not be.
Mr. Chair, I move the closed meeting to be adjourned and the Savannah County Board of Supervisors convene again in open session. Be resolved, the Board of Supervisors does hereby certify that to the best of each member's knowledge, one, only public questions matters lawfully exempted from open meeting requirements under Section 2.2-3711A of the Code of Virginia 1950 as amended, and two, only such public business matters as were identified in the motion which closed meeting was convened, were heard, discussed, or considered in the meeting.
Do I have second? Motion's made by Mr. O'Brien, seconded by Mr. Weaver. Booker?
Thank you. Yes.
Mr. O'Brien?
Yes.
Mr. Weaver?
Yes.
Mrs. Eager?
Yes.
The chair votes aye. Motion passes 5-0. Do we have a motion to adjourn?
I move we adjourn.
Second.
Motion made by Ms. Booker, seconded by Mr. Weaver. All in favor?
Merry Christmas.
Aye.
Opposed? The chair votes aye.
Second highest.